From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening and or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours, from Guam, out across the Dateline, all the way east to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, where I'm going to go visit one day, south into South America, north all the way to the pole. This is Coast to Coast AM, worldwide, of course, on the Internet. Well, good morning, everybody. I would like to start tonight by welcoming a brand new affiliate, KXNO in Des Moines, Iowa. Some people have been heard to say Des Moines. That's all right. You should see what they do to the name of my little town, Pahrump. So in Des Moines, welcome. 1460 on the dial. 5,000 big ones. Great to have Des Moines online. Good morning in Des Moines. And it is morning in Des Moines and various forms of the day everywhere else. Literally now, we reach across everywhere and from darkness to darkness and light to light, like the British Empire. The sun never quite sets on Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast to Coast, Coast AM. Well, oh, one more thing. I want to remind our affiliates and our listeners that we have pre-feeds. And every single night during the week when the program's on. Matter of fact, I think we do it on the weekend, too. But every night we pre-feed 3 hours of the previous night's show. The sound thinking here that people couldn't stay up that late, and so, you know, they lost a lot of the previous night show, and it has been working out really well, ratings-wise, for those stations across the country and elsewhere that have begun the show an hour or two or three early in the evening. Really, really works out, because the shows generally flow into each other, and it just simply makes sense to the audience. Now, speaking of flow, wasn't last night interesting? Huh? Was it one of the more interesting times you've ever had the opportunity to see what Hollywood does with a story? And then, particularly when it is the focus on one person's life, a major motion picture on Patch Adams' life, and then have an opportunity to hear the person for real. Isn't that interesting? I mean, you should really ponder on that for a while. I certainly have. Absolutely fascinating. Well, the power is going out. Went out again today in California, large parts of California. And now they're talking about turning off the power to the plants that are the refineries, you know, that are turning out whatever it is, the various products that refineries turn out, diesel, number two, gasoline, whatever all they turn out. They're talking about turning off the power to these places too. And I watched some interviews on CNN of some of the operators, and they said maybe 2 or 3 days, you know, to get back in operation after something like that. So this is going to become, this is going to start feed on itself as power goes off to refineries. And they do have a bill they're trying to get through to save the refineries so they don't go off. But if they do go off, it's going to obviously feed on itself. Less energy, more demand, equals more blackouts. Obviously, right? So what's going on in California will go on again, they say, tomorrow. It's very, very serious, and we are in the middle of the first just little heat wave of the coming summer. It's going to get a lot worse. And as they click on the air conditioners, as predicted in California, I told you that would happen, the blackouts would begin to get very serious, and they are. And if they start shutting, I thought, boy, turning off refineries, maybe not a good idea. What do you think? right now, at the beginning of this hour, I want you to listen to me very carefully. We're going to have Neil Slade on next hour, and we're going to be talking about the human brain. Now, listen to me very carefully, because you're not probably going to get to see this in the second hour. I don't know. Maybe you will. Do we have some servers, I'll tell you. That's it, Art. Brag on them and watch them go down. Neil has brought with him a video, the likes of which you probably have never seen before. Or maybe some lucky few of you have seen something like this. It's a news crew covering a man who's got a connection to his... I can never say that. That part of their brain that Neil frequently talks about. Amygdala. There it is. Thank you. Amygdala. I can never been able to get my mind, Neil, around that word. Amygdala. Anyway, he's got a wire hooked up, and it shows what the news crew that's going through this goes through themselves, the fellow on camera and then the sound man, as they're filming this incredible event. And the sound guy and the guy in the story are getting shocks from touching this man. Shocks, electrical shocks. That's only the first part of this video. It's video with sound, by the way. I'm about to tell you how to get to it. And you need to go to it early before Neil Slade gets here. The real blow-away comes toward the end. Toward the end, this man explains about the energy being created, how powerful it is, and also how dangerous it is. It could be very dangerous. If you can heal with it, you can kill with it. And he takes a newspaper out onto the sidewalk. And without at the end, he crumples it up. Without at the end touching it with his hands at all, you'll see the newspaper begin to smoke and burst into flames. This man holds his hand, 8 or 10 inches above the newspaper, open hands, and the newspaper turns brown, begins smoking, and bursts into flames. And all of this was covered by a camera crew, and it's very clear. Now, you're going to have to be the judge of what you're seeing yourself, but this is one mother of an amazing video. How do you get to it? You go to artbell.com, my website. You click on program. You click on tonight's guest info. You will see immediately the name Neil Slade. Just scroll down a little bit. And then you will see the first item at the top is what you want right now. Hopefully we have the servers to dish this out to you, and I think we do. You'll see entitled Real Video, Fire Brain Dash Man, High Speed, Low Speed. We've got a high speed, high quality version of this up there. And we've got a lower speed, lower quality version of this up there. For those of you that are able, or if you can afford the wait, I recommend the high speed version. If you can't do it, the lower speed one is there. Either way, this you've got to see this. You've really got to see this. I have never seen anything like it in my life. And, of course, it relates exactly to what Neil Slade is going to be talking about next hour. Oh, my. It's absolutely amazing. So, next hour, Neil will be along to talk about, actually, all kinds of things. We've got... quite a few things on our list. For example, Neil is now saying that he believes we have a second brain. A second brain. Yes, one here in the old noggin. But we have another brain somewhere else in our body. No jokes here, please. Where do you think the other brain is? Oh, you know, I just realized what foolish answers I'm going to get from a lot of you. So leave them out. I can hear the jokes. In fact, I've already made up three as I've been sitting here thinking about it. I wonder if I'll be able to resist. We better ask the question fast when we get Neil on, huh? Set everything else at rest. And then a third very popular category Neil's been into lately, I hear. Brain love chemicals. And the ever-popular one-hour brain orgasm. He calls it a brain-gasm. All gasms are in the brain, right? Anyway, we'll talk about all of that. And, of course, the now infamous, famous or infamous, depending on how you look at it, experiments that we did using mass numbers of brains in the audience. But again, you have never in your life seen anything like this that we've done on the website tonight. It's the amygdala. That's where the point or the wire is connected to the man's head. And then the rest of it, it's beyond all reason. And unless you conclude it's some kind of magician's trick, and I don't think it is, then you must join me and so many others in the audience in beginning to understand that we are so very much more than we appear to be, a pile of chemicals worth X number of dollars with inflation. I don't know what the human body is worth these days. But we're more than that. We're a lot more than that. That's what this video shows. And it's nice to have this level of proof. And, of course, there will inevitably be people around who will say it's some kind of magician's trick. It's got to be. And that's what the human mind tends to do. It tends to relegate to magic anything that it doesn't fully understand. If it's too amazing to be true, then it's magic for some people. Other people understand this is real and can be done. Either way, it will stun you. And my guess is you will want your friends to see it too. It's that profound. So again, just go to my website, artbell.com, go to program, and tonight's guest info, and then the name Neil Slade, and then just down below, first item, real video, fire brain dash man, high speed, low speed, you take your choice, and I guarantee it will be the most amazing thing that you saw today, anywhere. How's that? Okay, item. Our new kitty cat. Oh, I'll tell you what. I better take my break before I get going and I forget these breaks and it ends up costing me later. So while I'm thinking about it, here's the break and then we'll be right back.
KCMO.
Well, as you may or may not know, we have a new cat. The cat gods declared that we were going to get a new cat, and we've got it. Like it or not, it's a little waif of a cat. Went to the vet today. Negative for feline leukemia. Thank you. So, it got all of its shots, and it had the full treatment at the vet today, and is home now, and not all that happy. I mean, it's really happy to be home. It purred and went into its little bed and went to sleep. So, it had a really rough day at the vets. But now it's home and resting in its little bed and purring every time we go near it, so I suspect he will survive. And as soon as he's... And so we had a contest to name him, anyway. And thank you very much for the 3,000-plus names. The winner is JNF Scrivano, S-C-R-I-V-A-N-O. Simple. A very simple name, and yet endearing for this little beastie, whose name is Yeti. I thought that a kind of a cute name. We had every suggestion you could imagine. Thank you all for making them, but Yeti. Yeti is, well, it's like a cat name, for one thing. Most cat names end as in kitty, E, right? Anything else doesn't quite sound right. Yeti? Yes. Big paws? Oh, yes. This little gangly thing has giant paws, so Yeti is the winner. Send no more names. Oh, my God. 3,000 names to go through. 3,000 names. In the morning. Wednesday, 9 a.m. Stephen Greer, Dr. Stephen Greer at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. is going to have a press conference that's going to blow the socks off any reporter with the conies to go over there and check it out. He's going to have people at very high levels, fourth highest in the FAA. I mean, you think about this, fourth highest in the FAA at the time. He's going to have pilots and military personnel who are going to come forward and are going to give incontrovertible evidence, witness testimony of alien presence. It will be interesting, won't it, to see what kind of press shows up. This is a very serious presentation. Now, I don't see how the press could... How could they ignore this? You never know what they might do to it. There's usually ridicule that goes along with it, but I would think if I were CNN, I'd have my butt over there big time. I mean, we're talking about ratings here. So I'm appealing to their commercial side. That's the way to get them there, appeal to their commercial side. There's no question about the fact that those networks and television stations and C-SPANs and whoever all shows up or doesn't show up, whoever does show up is going to have one hell of a story, and their news network is going to get the ratings. When you have people of this magnitude showing up to say what they're going to say, there is no way that's not news. Major, justifiably covered news at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., 9 o'clock, Wednesday morning, the 9th. So, will it not be interesting to see who shows and who doesn't? I think there will be some press there. And I think the reason is because, hopefully, because they're listening to me and they know those who dispatch people, reporters, for these reasons. They know that it's worth a lot of ratings. It's worth one hell of a story. It's a visual story that you can go and get. People of great stature standing up to say amazing things, incredible things. Things that'll make a hell of a story. Now maybe I'm talking directly to the assignment editors, I suppose. Now we'll see what happens. I have a letter here from a Margaret down in the Antarctic. Margaret is in the Antarctic and she's really angry with us for the speculation that's been on the program about the Antarctic, and she really gives us the biz, and I will indeed read Margaret's letter here on the air. So it's coming up, Margaret. Get your recorder ready. I'm going to read your letter on the air, and you may well be right. The trouble is, you see, we don't know.
I'd like to know. whether the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing.
Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Good morning from the high desert. I'm Art Bell. We received the following scathing message from Margaret down, she says, in Antarctica. And it does indeed come from McMurdo.gov. So I think it's authentic. And it says, I've never heard such outrageous bull as I heard on your show about Antarctica. I'm down at McMurdo and happen to know all 11 people who left on the medevac. The reason that their medical conditions were not publicized is that their privacy is being protected. It's none of your damn business what their physical problems may be. They left for a variety of reasons, some medical, some personal. For you and your cohorts to take bits of information and construct paranoid conspiracy fantasies, then broadcast them to the public is worse than irresponsible. It's unethical. And it's unduly worrying those of our family and friends who are naive and trusting enough to believe you. Did it ever occur to you that the email comment made by the New South Pole doc stuffing her pockets with salt was a joke? Yes, they're low on salt at the pole because the people who do the ordering for down here are less than perfect. Here at McMurdo, they forgot to order chicken popcorn and flour tortillas. What kind of conspiracy theory are you going to make out of that? Flour, I'd say. Flour? They really forgot to order flour? Now, let's see, they forgot to order salt and flour. Now, those are pretty... Anyway, let me finish the letter. Don't you feel the tiniest bit absurd? We certainly think you are. Your broadcasts are passed around as a joke down here. And this isn't by management or Eurathion Black's ops, folks. We're just average people making a living in an unusual place. You will say whatever you want with no consequences for all the lies you tell. That is an unfortunate result of the free speech that we hold dear in our country. Just know there are many of us out here who know the truth. Signed, Meg Davis. P.S. I doubt very much if you have the nerve to read this in its entirety on your program. So you lost on that one, anyway. And as for the rest of it, Meg, the world has an interest in what happens down there. And the rest of the world, and I too, find it more than a little unusual that the two doctors who came out under emergency conditions were taken out the symptoms of the illness requiring an unusual evacuation at a very dangerous time of the year. That, you know, we were told all about it. And lots of information flowed from McMurdo about what was wrong. So then how are these other 11 people different? Well, you say it's none of our damn business. Maybe true. But I don't buy into that. I think, actually, we do have a right to be concerned about it. I think it's unusual enough, and the numbers are large enough,
And then there's those two that were in critical condition, Meg, and we still don't know what happened to them. So I wrote Meg back, and I told her that if she would like to tell us the truth, then maybe there wouldn't be so many rumors flying around about what people imagine, because when they don't know what's going on, they imagine things. And the South Pole is a very unusual place with very unusual things going on, magnetic anomalies in the ice. And then I was thinking about flour. Now, what would be, if you were ordering food and the things that would keep you alive, and you knew that you were going to get nothing all winter long, you'd be really, really careful about what you ordered, right? And the staples, the basic stuff like flour and salt that you've got to have to live, those would be staples that you wouldn't make that kind of mistake on, I think. Salt, you've got to have salt. You have to have salt. And flour is such a basic that I find it a little more than passing strange that you would forget that. So what I would suggest, Meg, is that you write us back an email, since I've read yours now, and tell us what really went on down there. And we can accept the truth. If it was a fight, if it wasn't just a matter of personal preferences, people hop in a plane, there were two separate things, rescues going on here, right? So I could buy into the possibility of a fight, but Meg, I must tell you otherwise, there will be lots of imagining that's going on about what's going down on down in the Antarctic, because that's people's nature. When they don't know the truth, then they begin imagining all sorts of things. And can you blame them? So the best way to clear it up would be to tell us what happened. I mean, it's fine. You can tell us it's none of our damn business, and I guess it can end there and people just keep wondering, or you can tell us what happened. That's up to y'all down there. But if you were on our side of the whole story, I think that you would be also wondering very, very hard about what's going on down there. There are a lot of strange circumstances converging all at once. Simple as that. All right, open lines directly ahead. There's so much more. So much about Mr. Tito. We're trying to get an interview with Mr. Tito, who just got back. And I've got articles on Mr. Tito and articles on Golden and his attitude about it all. And this has just been the most amazing, amazing thing. Golden made some comments about the filmmaker, James Cameron, that were considerably more friendly than toward Mr. Tito. And so you have to wonder what's going on there. It's kind of like Cameron seems as though he'll be all right to NASA, because he's willing to wait until the time is right for NASA to say, okay, come on up. So we'll have to watch what happens there. It's a really interesting story. Gasoline prices going up exponentially. The $3 guess in Chicago is going to turn out, I'm afraid, to be a pretty good one, and probably $3 elsewhere. Can you imagine that for a gallon of gasoline? What do you think that will do to our economy? If it actually went up to $3 a gallon, then you're talking about an impact on an economy. Very serious impact indeed. All right, a break and then open lines. Stay right there. Oh, now here's an interesting little tidbit I forgot, Meg, we'd like to ask you about with regard to the Antarctic. The infrared shots of the Antarctic have been down for about a week now. And a lot of us are wondering why the infrared shots of just the Antarctic would be down. So, Meg, you could help out a lot here, you see, by, I guess, clearing some things up. And it would stop so many people from wondering about what's going on down there. Just, you know, it does seem unusual, Meg. So thanks for the email, and we'll look forward to hearing from you. Although I doubt very much if you have the nerve to send the information requested. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
First time callers, area code 775-727-1222.
No, I just had to bleep that out. The one thing we don't allow is people to give their last names on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you're just Jeremy, okay?
All right.
All right, Jeremy.
The reason I'm calling is because, to tell you the honest truth, I think that our new president is the new Antichrist for the new world order. I've been thinking about this for a long time.
No, he's not.
Yeah, well, listen, he doesn't want to cut gas prices down to what they were.
No, he's going to let the price of gas float, and it's going to float up to about $3 is what's going to happen, but he is not the Antichrist.
Why not? All the stuff that's been going on lately is...
The Antichrist, it will deal in things far more significant than this summer's price of gas, I guarantee.
It's almost like the crisis of 1979, though.
I'm telling you again, the Antichrist will dabble in things that will affect you far more than this. Even though this is going to be serious, it's not up to Antichrist-level stuff.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not.
All right, thanks.
It's not, yeah, you bet. No, I don't think he's the Antichrist. Not President Bush. Eustace Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello?
This Teresa?
Hi, Teresa. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good.
We're in Tennessee.
In Tennessee.
Yes.
How's Tennessee?
I just had a curious question.
All right, a curious question. All questions are curious. How's Tennessee this morning? How's everything?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Good. All right, go ahead.
I heard something about the comet Lanier.
Yes.
What happened? I don't like. Listen to me. Yes.
What has happened is, the astronomers were watching it one day recently, and by golly, it split right in two, right down the middle, poof. And then when it did, it got 100 times brighter.
And
you can only imagine what the astronomers who were watching at the time said when that happened.
Yeah.
I wonder what they did say.
Well, see, I read this book, Maya Cosmogenesis, and...
Yes.
It said something about something striking the Earth in 2012. And I didn't know, is the comet Lanier passed by Earth's orbit or anything?
Well, it'll be long gone by 12, back again by 2012. I don't know. Or
if
sucked
it split
into the sun.
Two, would it be on a new orbit?
Lots of things could happen. It could just keep on trucking, or it could get sucked into the sun. Now, that's the interesting one. When these things get sucked into the sun, they cause the sun to do disproportionately large, weird things.
Oh.
Yes. So that's what you want to watch for.
Yeah, I was just curious about that, because I read that book, and I was like, wow, this comet split in two. And
yep.
I was just wondering. And the Russian space station Mir, there was a fungus on there. Was there any news on what the fungus is when it crashed, when it went into the Earth?
Nobody has found the big pieces or the Mir. They're at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, and nobody's even hunting. So you can imagine anything from the following. The fungus burned up, and it got crispied during reentry.
Okay.
Or the fungus survived and dies in salt water.
Oh, my.
Or the fungus survived and thrives in warm salt water, relatively warm to where it's been. Surviving after it survived in space, right? So now that it's got a little gravity and it's got some nutrients to feed on in the ocean, it's going to get real big and come ashore, and it's going to have big teeth.
Oh my!
Oh yes, we've all seen the movies.
Yes, right. And
right?
Maybe they took some samples of the fungus and took it into Destiny Space Lab and does some secret testing on it.
Well, they like to say it's refrigerator class fungus, like the fungus you find behind your fridge.
Yeah.
But it was out in space where it was being irradiated with totally unearthly type levels of radiation, and no doubt mutating.
Oh, I know. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. Take your choice from any of the above. Who knows? They're not going to get pieces of mirror, so we'll just have to wait and see what comes. or doesn't. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi.
Hi, this is Art from Portland.
Yes,
listening to you on 1190 KX.
Yes, sir.
Just a tidbit about the chemtrails. They're raising heck up here over Portland and northwestern Oregon.
So I've been hearing, yes.
But just a kind of interesting little tidbit. I was watching the movie channel, Michael Landon's first movie, or one of them, the Teenage Werewolf Kid.
Right, I remember.
Anyway, beginning of the show, it kind of, camera pans up towards the sky a little bit, and I just couldn't believe it. There were about a half a dozen chemtrails in the shot. And this was back in 58 or 59, I believe.
Yes, I'm not surprised.
And so I didn't know, it might have been old news to you, but I just thought some of the guys, you listeners, might be interested. And obviously,
no.
They've been doing this for quite a while.
No, no, it's not news. Believe me, I've been following it very closely.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Sure, I'm following it. That, the possibility of aluminum in them and all the rest of it. And also, this story, which we began following late last week, black mold. All of a sudden, there's this big thing about black mold, and I hadn't heard a word about black mold. But all of a sudden, I'm hearing that homes are being torn down, schools are being closed, all over the place in Texas, but not just Texas. Here's a message from Barbara in Sparks, I guess. Black mold found, yeah, here it is, in Northern Nevada Sparks home. Occupants had to move out. Enough concern raised by awareness in community to warrant schools to check. Mold found in two high schools, two middle schools, three elementary schools in small amounts. Still alert in Reno for possible other black mold problems. Reno Gazette articles many days, so there have been a lot of articles about it up in the Reno Gazette. This one snuck up on me. I had not heard about black mold until now. I don't know what it is. I don't want anything to do with it. It apparently, unfortunately, appears to thrive in Nevada. Phooey. You would think something like that wouldn't like our state. Generally, probably too dry for mold, you would think. But no, it's here. Black mold. Great. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Bert.
Yes, hi.
This is Jeff calling from Newmarket, Ontario. I'm listening to you on Mojo 640.
Yes, sir.
I have one quick question regarding when these people were taken out. You said there was 11 of them.
You're talking about the Antarctic, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes. When the 11 were taken out,
yes.
Was there any replacement personnel taken in?
I don't have the answer to that question. I certainly did not hear about any replacements going in.
Taking out those people, you would think they would have had some kind of jobs they would have had to do. They would have needed them down there.
I agree with you. You would think that, but there was no news of that. The whole thing involving the 11 was really pretty mysterious, frankly. The dock, that was covered extensively by the news, almost at times exclusively by the news, while the 11 flew way under the radar and still... Really, even though Meg laid it on us, she said, it's none of your damn business. So, you know, something happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was never in the news story. They kept putting a little bit more in every day after they started off with the one doctor.
I mean, do you feel about it? Don't you think it's beyond a little curious?
Well, I don't know why it didn't get the attention that it did, considering that there's no flights out of the Antarctic for, like, what, 6-7 months a year?
Yeah. I know.
All of a sudden, they're pulling all these people out of there.
Yeah, it takes heroic measures to get them out, absolutely heroic measures. And so, you know, people, particularly if they're told it's none of their damn business, they're going to get curious about this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's great. Thank you, Bart.
And you're very welcome. And I think, obviously, you feel this very same way. We're not getting the whole story. Now, maybe we're not entitled to the whole story, as she said. But it seems to me that... I don't know. It, just seems to me that we should have some understanding of what went on, and that if we did, it would prevent the kind of speculation that's going on that disturbs her so. And I think it's natural that because it's an entire continent peopled by so few, that there's a natural worldwide curiosity about it. Now, maybe she's right, and it's none of our damn business, but they certainly made it our business to know about the doctor and every little bit of everything that was wrong with him medically, and why the heroics to go down there and all the rest of that. So then to me it seems, yes, unusual that we would be told to go stick our heads in the sand when we want to know about the others. So many. Of course we're curious. Because it's a good comment on the general human condition right now. I think that's it. Well, so far, I can't get hold of Neil Slade. I don't know where he is.
Want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
Well, I hope Neil's all right. All I get when I call the number that we arranged for air is a message. I've got two numbers, both answer, but Neil's not there. So, you never know what we're going to do. As a matter of fact, let me try again so you can actually hear it yourself. I'll tell you what I'm getting. Very strange, especially for a brain guy.
Hi, this is Neil Slade. Please leave a message. Thanks.
Hey, Neil. The message is we're on the air and you're not. Where are you? Are you okay? We're concerned. People don't miss broadcast times like that. Now, wait a minute now. I'm getting some kind of strange message. He's got a disconnected wire. He's fixed. He's home. He's ready. Right? We'll try it again here in a second. We'll get Neil Slade, I'm confident. A wire in the wrong place, huh? Likely story. You probably came out with the 11, didn't you? All right, so anyway, here's the deal. There is the most amazing video that you've ever seen in your whole life on my website right now. And we have it up there because I fear that Niels would not handle the traffic. In fact, I know so. We also have his website up there, and just all kinds of interactive discussion areas and all kinds of things. If you'll go to my website right now, the one you want to see, just go to artbell.com. Go to program, go to tonight's guest info. There you will see the name Neil Slade. Scroll down. First thing you'll see will be real video, Fire Brain Man, high speed and low speed versions. I recommend the high speed if you can do it. It'll blow your mind. This guy, it shows a guy with an electrode hooked up to his... You see, I'm never going to be able to say that word unless I see it. If I see it, and it's somewhere here in the paperwork, I can pronounce it. Amygdala. Amygdala. Why am I blocking that word? Amygdala. He's got a wire hooked up, and then you'll see the doctor actually shock the cameraman. There's video and sound here. I mean, you can see the whole thing. He'll shock the cameraman, then the sound man, actually give him a shock, and then toward the end, the most amazing thing you've ever seen of all, a man will set a newspaper on fire with his hands. He's not even touching the paper when it occurs. It is absolutely amazing. That's on the website right now, and it should be a precursor, or should certainly, if you have a computer, to go with listening to what you're about to hear tonight. Because it's amazing. Nothing short of amazing. It is there right now. We'll be right back. I should tell you a little bit about Neil Slade, shouldn't I, now that we have him here? Neil Slade is a teacher, musical composer, concert performer, author, and for 11 years was primary assistant to brain and behavior researcher TDA Lingo at the Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory situated high in the Colorado Rocky Wilderness. He's been heard on radio stations around the world explaining to Londoners and Russians alike how ordinary citizens can turn on fantastic, unprecedented levels of new intelligence, creativity, and pleasure, as well as obviously paranormal abilities such as telepathy, precognition, clairvoyance, clairaudience, whatever that is, and telekinesis, as easily as clicking on a light switch. Slade has even been employed by the Denver Public Schools to teach an entire elementary school student body and the teachers how to circuit past reptile brain attack behaviors and into fun, cooperative trust intelligence by merely learning a few brain basics. His 5 books on brain self-control are all recommended by the prestigious Mensa International Journal. That's not bad, huh? As well as the respected Bloomberry Review, National Book Review Magazine, and the National Alternative Press. He maintains a very extensive worldwide website, The Amazing Brain Music Adventure, at www.neilslade.com. We've got a link up to that right now on the website. But you must see this video, and by now I trust that many of you have, so that when we do get call-in part of this show, you will have seen it, and you'll be able to comment. You've either got to believe the man is doing it as you see it done on video here, or it's some kind of magic trick. Or, as I said earlier, magic may apply simply to those things that our brain can't comprehend as possible. It's magic. Here's Neil Slade. And now, Neil, you were telling me something about your dog did this, right? Your dog?
My dog ate my homework.
Your dog ate your homework.
No, you know what it was?
What was it?
Computer, unbeknown to me, had dialed out.
Yes.
And you had gotten my internet answering machine service.
Your internet answering machine service.
Yes, when I'm online, it works just like my telephone answering machine. So it sounded like you got, hi, this is Neil Slade.
I did, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, my apologies, and I'm sending my computer into the corner now for being bad.
Yeah, and they're going to take over one day, too. Well, all right, so listen. Earlier tonight, I crawled to the computer when I woke up from my evening nap. And first thing I looked at was this video. And it blew me away, of course. It's going to do that for everybody. You watch this, and let's talk about exactly what the hell's going on in this video, shall we?
You got to tell people, if they don't have a home computer, get to your public library.
Yeah, that's right.
And either go to your site or my site and look at this video. It is
right,
absolutely authentic.
For the sightless, or, you know, those who really don't have a computer, and the whole group that's not going to be able to see this, let us describe what's in this video and what's happening.
This is a video produced by Lawrence and Lauren Blair. It's not a video. It's actually from a film documentary of their travels through Indonesia.
Okay.
And they spent 10 years back in the 80s sailing on boats from island to island, and they went to all the Indonesian islands and discovered all kinds of interesting, you know, ways that people live. They went into the deep woods of rainforests of Borneo, where white man had never been before. They went to Java, they went to Bali, all the little islands, and they just, you know, their film is about their travels, this particular film. In one segment of this film...
You mean they went before Mr. Burnett and Survivor?
Apparently so.
Just kidding. Go ahead.
And very well respected. We're talking serious filmmakers here.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, Lorne, who's one of the cameramen, got an eye infection. And so they went to the island of Java, and they heard about a physician, a Taoist physician on the island.
Right.
And that he would, they went to him so he would cure the eye infection so they could continue filming.
Right.
So the video is of their visit to this doctor's office. Now the doctor had a reputation. And they had given him the name Dynamo Jack. His name actually does not appear in the film for the simple reason that he is a recluse and he's not looking for publicity.
If this is real,
yes.
Nobody could blame him. But,
yes.
I mean, after seeing this...
Yeah.
There are going to be people listening to this program buying tickets to Borneo.
Well, you know, I just spoke with Lawrence Blair on the phone a couple hours ago.
Yes.
I called him in Bali, mm-hmm. and he lives actually about 30 miles from me here up in Boulder, Colorado. And I talked with his producer, and I called Lawrence, and I wanted to get some more, you know, details that I didn't yet have on this doctor. And he's now, he's working on a new book and a movie about this particular individual who is absolutely remarkable. He recently had scientists, we're talking about, you know, hard-nosed scientists from the European community come and check the guy out and make sure there were no tricks.
Right.
And that this was not sleight of hand. And he told me about some of the things that Dynamo Jack was doing in the presence of the scientists.
So they call him Dynamo Jack.
They call him Dynamo Jack, and he's not going to give out his name. Because
all right.
He's
so anyway, I don't care. So
yeah.
Anyway, Dynamo Jack
Lawrence,
treated the eye, right?
He treated the eye.
And
so
what
In the video, you see him putting the acupuncture needles in a couple locations. One of which is right in front of the amygdala. You know how. We explain many times to people how they can point to their amygdala.
Is that what that is? That's not a wire then, or it
that's
is?
That's a one-inch needle going into the brain.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Really, I'd rather have an eye infection.
Well, I've actually had that acupuncture done myself.
You have?
Yes, and it causes absolutely no discomfort.
I thought it was a wire. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to... Watch it again. Oh, my God. There
yes, and you can see him twist it into his skull.
Oh,
there.
You're right. I'm watching it right now. twist. Oh, no. Hey,
then,
give
and then
me
what,
an eye infection any day.
Yeah, so this needle, it looks like it's in back of the eyeball and in the region of the amygdala.
Okay, well, what made me think it was hooked up to a wire was he has a wire around his neck. What is that?
Oh, a wire around his neck?
Or something around his neck, yeah.
I didn't catch that. No, you're talking about the doctor?
No. I'm talking about... Your man, he's got something around his neck.
Oh, I'll have to look at that. It's probably just a necklace, or
well, is your own computer hooked up or have you?
Yeah, it would take me a second, and I can do that without disconnecting myself here, and I'll fire this right up, and I'll look at that.
All right,
and then
anyway,
I'll tell you what that is.
All right, good. Anyway,
and
I'll
turn down the volume here on my computer.
Yeah, that's fine. You'll just
now
hit
you're talking
it.
About something around the neck of. It looks like a medallion. It's a long medallion that Lauren was wearing, and it's, I believe, a piece of leather, and it's insignificant in this particular thing.
Okay.
So what the physician is doing now, he is creating electricity in his body. Now you've heard of electric acupuncture. Where
yes.
they hook the acupuncture needles up to an electrical generating machine.
Can I stop you for just one second?
Yeah.
We'll come right back here.
Sure.
When he was twisting that real long needle into that guy's brain.
Yes.
Since you've had it done.
Yes.
Could I ask what it's like? What does it feel like to have a needle screwed into your brain? Curiosity.
You just feel a little tingling
on the
outside of the skin. So it depends. You know, I've had a lot of acupuncture done, and I've had it done by different people.
And?
Sometimes the pain can be, some people think that all acupuncture is painless. Well, this is not true. Sometimes it is almost unbearable as it's being put in. Now, as a general rule, once an acupuncture needle is in and placed, it's painless.
Yeah, well, sure, it's not moving at that point.
It's not moving, but sometimes when it's screwed in, now I've had some
screwing
done on
in, yeah.
Once I've had some done on my feet, where you had to give me a bullet to bite into while this needle was being put in, and
right.
while it was being put in, it hurt, and once it was done, I was fine, no problem. I've never had an acupuncture needle that actually hurt while it was in place. The one that had gone into my amygdala points. There was just a little tingling sensation on the outside. There was no pain while it was being inserted.
Is there no danger in screwing a thing into a person's brain like that?
Well, this by all means, don't try this at home, kids.
No, I'm
you have to
not,
know what you're doing.
But I mean, even with somebody who really knows what they're doing, without the aid, for example, of some sort of a visual aid that would allow the person to look at your brain while they're doing this so they know where they're going. Wouldn't there be some small... You must have thought about all this before you did it, right?
Yes, but the people who I've been involved with who've done acupuncture, I trust implicitly, and these are people with decades of experience.
I mean, I'd want to have an MRI machine going or something so they knew exactly where they were going, but... Somehow they know.
This particular point that I had done in my head is not that uncommon in acupuncture. So, again, don't try this at home, folks. All acupuncture should be done by somebody who is a qualified, licensed acupuncture specialist. So, it sounds pretty hairy, but I've generally had very good experience with acupuncture.
I've had nightmares about stuff like that. Really?
I've learned to do it on myself.
You've screwed these things into your own brain?
Not into my brain.
Good.
In other acupuncture points in my feet and in my arms.
Oh, fine. I understand that. I understand that. But you've not done any of your own brain work, so to speak.
No. Don't recommend it.
Is it... would you recommend that people try it with somebody who knows what they're doing, like this man?
No, that's the only way to try it. You don't want your neighbor experimenting on you.
Here, Frank, lay down.
And in Colorado, I believe you have to be licensed to do acupuncture.
Wait till you get a load of this. Are they then allowed to acupuncture the brain? Or is there some regulation about that in the U.S.?
I think once you get your acupuncture license, it's, no holds barred.
Real? No holds barred. Cute, Neil. When did you do this?
It's been done recently. I did some of my own points as recently as a couple weeks ago.
The brain one.
Oh, the brain one?
Yeah.
I'd say this was 2 years ago. And I had a friend who was diagnosed with MS, and he had some needles put in his brain as well.
Yes.
And it's not that uncommon. If you have eye disorders, you'll have needles put in, and that's going to be going very close to the brain as well.
Where do they put those?
Well, if we're looking at the video, it's probably, this needle is placed in an area that is adjacent to the amygdala and probably into the rear of the eyeball as well. So
rear of the
this
eyeball.
Was an eye ailment that he was treated for.
That's right. All right, listen, Neil, we're at the bottom of the hour. Hold on. Neil Slade is my guest. Lots to talk about tonight. An incredible video at artbell.com. This is one you really got to see.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222. Or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
Good morning, the brain guy is here, Neil Slade, and I distracted him a little bit and stopped him from giving a sort of a vocal rendering of the visual rendition you can get on my website of this absolutely astounding piece of video. There's sound and video. Go see it. Trust me on this. Your friends are going to want to see it. You'll complain if you don't see it, so just take the time and trouble and go to your computer and go to artbell.com and see it. I distracted him because to me there's always been something particularly horrible about the specter of taking a needle and screwing it into somebody's brain. I mean, that's about, to me, that's as bad as it gets. And I can tell you something, I'd have one awful eye infection before I'd ever let anybody screw anything in my brain. For an eye infection, I wouldn't do it. Give me penicillin. But no, there's so much more to this story that I didn't mean to distract him. We'll get back to that story in a moment for those who cannot see.
KCMO.
All right. Here we go again, and we're going to try and pick story up now. I'm going to try and mentally get past the needle getting screwed into the brain. All right, Neil.
Yeah.
Let us proceed. So that's what you see. You see that that sight at the beginning of the video, the needle into the brain, and then what?
Then Dynamo Jack, Dr. Dynamo Jack, applies electricity to the acupuncture needles. Now, the reason for this is that you can supplement or, you know, supercharge the effect of an acupuncture needle by applying current to it.
Sure. Okay. Do you know offhand how much current? Voltage and current?
In this particular case, I don't know the exact current. And as a general rule, I couldn't tell you how much voltage it is.
Okay.
It's something that would... I haven't had the electric acupuncture done, but I have been told it just feels like a warmth or heat. You feel it as heat being applied to where that is. And the doctors who use that have a big machine that sits on a tabletop, and you plug it in to 120 volts.
Mm-hmm.
And then through the transformer, it sends the safe amount of current through the acupuncture jump cables, which are clipped onto the acupuncture needle.
Jump cables.
However...
All right, you know, I really... In the future, if you're able to find out for me,
yeah.
I would like to know the voltage and current involved, but I understand you don't know. So, jumper cables, I don't know. I'd use that phrase.
Well, that's what they look like. They have little spring clips on the end. And so I'll find that out for you, and I'll let you know how much voltage.
Right.
You know, it's a variable amount of voltage, and I believe that depends on the acupuncture needle site and the ailment as well.
Right.
But in this particular video, electric acupuncture is used. However, there's no machine plugged in. What's happening is this Taoist physician is producing the electric current
himself,
like a human electric eel, in his own body. And then by putting his hands, and he's focusing the electric current to flow into his arms,
right,
and then into his fingertips, he twists the needles or touches the needles with his hands, and this transfers the electric current into the needles. Now, Lauren talks about on the video, and you can see the involuntary motion that his arms and his hands are going through. You know, when you...
He's jumping around like a fish on a frying pan.
That's right, yeah.
Put it
and
mildly.
And he's feeling it, and he's saying it's not a very... He doesn't describe it as a mild shock. He says he's getting very powerful electric currents going through his body.
Right.
Now, the other camera...
I will tell you what little I do know about what you can feel and what you can't feel, but... As a general circumstance, I mean, you can take a 9-volt battery and put it on your tongue. You'll get a little tingle. You'll get nothing at all from your hands. Holding it with an average dry hand, I suppose it's going to take about 50 volts, somewhere in there, for the human to even begin to feel it. So the amount of current and voltage that we're talking about here, at least voltage, must be fairly substantial, I would think substantially above 50 volts, and that's just an educated guess, Neil.
Lawrence describes this doctor's power as industrial
strength. Yeah.
He says he gave demonstrations of lighting light bulbs with his hand.
Lighting light bulbs?
Holding a light bulb and lighting it.
Oh, well.
We're not talking about, you know, 9 volts here. Or, you know, half an amp. We're talking electric socket current.
Yeah, I understand. Why don't we just allow immigration of, you know, thousands of fellows like this and make them stay in California and it's all over.
That could be. That could do it.
Anyway, it is amazing. I mean, what you're talking about is simply amazing. All right, so fine.
So
light up light bulbs.
So, you know, the camera crew and Lawrence, who is doing some, you know, observing, and then there's a woman with a microphone. Everyone's going, well, that, you know, that looks interesting, but, you know, we're kind of skeptical.
Skeptical.
And Lawrence says, he says, well, you know, is there any way you can generate the electricity other than, you know, can other than through your hands? He says, no, generally it's through my hands. And he says, here, hold out your hand,
right,
and I'll show you.
That's right.
This might burn a little.
Right.
It's nothing, he says.
Right.
And then he holds out his hand, and, you know, like that picture on the Sistine Chapel where, you know, the two hands meet.
Right.
He gives Lawrence such a shock that he jumps back.
Jumps back, yeah, there's no question about it. He got shocked.
Now, Simi, who is the
sound
holding the microphone, she's skeptical. You know, she says, wait, I don't believe this.
Right.
So the doctor then says, okay, you come over here, and he pulls up his shirt. Now, he explains that the electric current in his body is something that he has been trained to produce with meditation, with his mind and brain.
Right.
And that he was trained since he was a child for 18 years to develop this skill using his mind brain. And he does it to heal. Okay? We can talk a little more about that later. But anyway, he pulls up his shirt and he says, you know, I have learned how to harness the yin-yang energies in my body.
Right.
And he says the yin comes up here and the yang comes down here and they meet here in my stomach. They meet here in my stomach. And he points to his stomach.
Right.
So he pulls up his shirt and he says, put your hand here. And this very skeptical microphone holder person puts her hands on his stomach and she howls. She goes, whoa! And
yeah,
you see her
absolutely
jump in the
true
video.
Absolutely true.
And she can't, it's like, you know, totally surprised.
Right,
because,
see and hear all of this, folks, on the video on the website.
And I believe you actually hear the microphone pop. And
yep.
I edited this tape so you don't see her doing this. But she starts tapping on the microphone to show that, you know, it picked up the sound of this electrical
right
pop from her.
Right.
So that's the basic demonstration. And then they ask him how, you know, his background, and he explains that he's done it by using the power of his mind brain through the meditation, that he can focus it. And that really this is a latent power, he says. What he can do is
in
nothing
everybody
special, that everybody can do this if they would only learn to focus their mind, okay? And he then does the final demonstration, and he takes an ordinary newspaper and holds it to the camera, tears a big sheet, and then crumples it very, very loosely and sets it down on the ground.
That's right.
In front of everyone.
That's right.
And then he holds out his arm.
Camera's rolling.
Camera's rolling nonstop. And he holds his hand, oh, I'd say about an inch or two above the newspaper.
Right.
And then you see him sort of like take a breath, pull his arm back a little bit, and then you see his arm and hand vibrate, and he's obviously concentrating very hard.
Right.
The newspaper starts to smoke, and within 2 seconds, the whole thing bursts into flame. And it's engulfed by flame, and within seconds, the newspaper is completely burnt up, and you see the fire and the smoke, and he stamps it out with his feet.
Yep. Everything you just heard described, folks, is available to be seen on video with audio on my website right now. Go to tonight's program. I think that's what it is up here, right? Tonight's program. Program. It just says program on the left. Tonight's guest info, and then just simply click on, it says real video right below Neil Slade's name and bio, and then high speed or low speed. If you can get it, do get the high speed one. It might take a little longer, but it's much better quality.
I've actually I played the high speed video on a slower computer, and it sort of shows it like a slideshow. So
yeah,
it's nice and clear.
Yeah.
But so, you know, try both and see which one you get.
Which one works best for you?
The only time I've ever seen a newspaper burst into flame so quickly and burn up so quickly is when I put a newspaper into a frighteningly hot fireplace.
Yeah.
It had been burning logs for hours.
Yeah, and you reach the moment or instant of ignition, boom, like that.
Yes, it's like instantaneous. And
yeah,
that's what we see in this video. And there's no way that he could have, you know, dropped him. I mean, it's first of all, there's no motive for trickery
involved.
And
he says anybody can do this, right?
He says this is a power that is in every person.
All right, listen carefully, Neil. Listen now. Do you hear that?
Yes.
That's your bio. Now, I'm putting it right on the table. I've already read it, so I have to read it again. I put it right on the table in front of me right now, and I'm going to be working on causing this to burst into flames between now and the end of the show.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to happen. Obviously, it takes a great deal of some kind of training to get to this point. I mean, you don't just jump into that kind of talent.
And it's very specific training, see? It's not the kind of training where you people might wonder, why did I even, deliver this video? What's the point of the video?
Oh, well, there's a big point.
You know, the point is, what is the most powerful force you have at your disposal? What do you want in life? You know, what do you want to, what do you want to get? Where do you want to go? Where do you see yourself a year from now or 5 years from now? And what are you going to use to get there? Are you going to run around the block 20 times, right? Are you going to go to a vending machine at the supermarket and stick in 50 cents? The most powerful force you have at your disposal is right between your two ears. It's the same force that Dynamo Jack uses to create electricity with his hands.
Right.
It's the same force that he uses to make that newspaper reach the flash point. And that power and force is in your human brain. And that's why I brought this video for people to see. Here's a person who has learned to focus his brain, mind, energy on healing.
Well,
healing for you.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir to me. I know you're right. I know the brain is very powerful. But for the skeptics out there,
yeah,
how carefully was this fellow investigated? I mean, you must admit that what we see on this video is to us magic. It's magic to us. What, you know, our little brains explain something like this as, it's a magic trick, it's baloney, it can't be true, because we don't perceive that it can be true. I mean, it just is unacceptable to our brains that something like this that we can see here could occur. So we explain it as magic. Or we say, what a bunch of bunk, or something. I don't know. We, you know, it's inexplicable, so we try and explain it. We fit it into a category, and either it's magic or it's bunk.
Yeah.
That's what some people are going to do now.
Sure, and I've even gotten a couple emails already to that effect. And,
yep.
And what you have to say to those kind of people is, well, number one, I implicitly trust the filmmakers, and we're talking about Lawrence and Lauren Blair, who are essentially documentary filmmakers, highly respected, have had their work on PBS. They are not out to fool or trick anyone, or there's no motive for them to presenting a fraudulent bit of information. That's number one.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that.
The other thing people might say is, well, yeah, but this guy pulled the wool over their eyes.
Right,
well,
right.
He has no motive for it. He, in fact, didn't want his name on the film. His profession is as a doctor, not as an entertainer.
Yes.
With a background, as he said, he was a trained Taoist, trained in Taoist meditation.
PBS did something on it, huh?
I believe many years ago I first saw this clip on PBS.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, so...
And now... In the preparation for the upcoming book and movie that Lawrence is doing on this fellow now, he got the scientists to come to Bali and did the research. But Dynamo Jack is not the first one to undergo really rigorous scientific investigation.
Oh, I know a lot of yogis have.
There's a fellow, and I got a lot of information on this fellow. His name is Swami Rama. Have you ever heard of
Swami Rama?
Swami Rama is a Himalayan yoga master. Grew up in the Himalayan mountains of India, and in the 60s came to the United States and began traveling in the Western countries to teach meditation and yoga. In the spring and autumn of 1970, he conducted, at the request of the Menninger Foundation, this is a research establishment in Topeka, Kansas, with a long, respected history. And they were running a voluntary controls research program. And among the people that they invited to investigate was Swami Rama. There's another fellow, Jack Schwartz, who also demonstrated extraordinary voluntary controls of the mind and body and demonstrated telekinesis and so on. Under very stringent laboratory conditions, despite what the amazing Randy might claim as scientists having the wool pulled over their eyes.
Now, shouldn't this video cost Randy $1 million?
Yeah, it should, shouldn't it?
Yes, it should.
It really should.
It should make Randy's $1 million.
Well, you know, I should pass that along to Lawrence and say, hey, listen, here's an easy million. And I'll mention that to him.
It's never easy with Randy.
Yeah, well, you know, I've noticed that, too, that Randy manages to find loopholes and things like that.
But so. You would think, though, that, I mean, Dynamo Jack, much as he might not want to be in the public eye,
yeah,
could probably be into. He's there, and he's probably not getting, you know, the kind of money American doctors get, even close.
I
bet he could use the million.
Possibly, he mentioned to Lawrence, and I get this via the producer, that he was starting to have bad dreams about all the publicity, and he really has no desire for fame or fortune. His ability is a purely frontal lobes, cooperative, compassionate service. And this ties very much in with what Patch Adams was talking about last night. The true healer does not have the thoughts of riches or fame or material desires.
Right.
And in my opinion, one of the reasons that this particular doctor is able to draw upon these powers is because they are very much integrated with the whole system of compassionate, cooperative behaviors.
Obviously, though he didn't exactly say it, the power that he has could be used to heal, or it could also be used, if you wanted it to, at his level, to kill.
Absolutely.
Very quickly kill without ever touching somebody, right?
Yep.
All right. Hold it right there, Neil. We're at the top of the hour. Neil Slade is my guest, and we're talking about our brains. We all have one to some degree or another.
To the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach out at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Well, I tried. For 20 minutes, I tried to set Neil's bio on fire. I hovered my hand very close to the paper times, actually touching it, hoping for something, and there was nothing. So I decided, well, I'm going to have some fun then. So I took Neil's bio, and I turned my web camera on, and I lit it with my Bic. And I thought, this will make a cool webcam picture. So I got back here, and I was waiting for it to snap. You know, it snaps every 2 minutes. And so when I thought it was getting close, I lit it, and I was sitting here waiting for it to snap. And the fire was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I was waiting for it to snap, and then it started burning my hand, and finally it snapped. And it was so underwhelming because when you go to look at the picture on my webcam right now, you're going to really, it's hard to discern between the paper and the fire and the fact that it's scorching my hand. Then, after it snapped the picture, I had a real hard time getting it out, and it smelled terrible, and it burned my hand. So that wasn't even worth it at all. So if you go now to my my webcam, you will see me holding this paper, which is actually on fire, but you can barely tell that. You can hardly tell that. Wasn't even worth it. And now I don't have his bio anymore anyway. Anyway, Neil Slade, see, the video on my website is nothing like this. This guy did it for real. It is awesome to see. We're going to continue talking with Neil about our brains in a moment. Stay right. Boy, this does hurt. Stay right there.
KCMO.
By the way, for those of you who have written me, say, some of you hear what's going on during the network breaks, and because of the AFTRA strike, they're not playing the usual public service announcements during the break that they used to play because of actors' fees or whatever in the hell the big struggle is going on right now. So they have sent us this strange music that we are supposed to play during the breaks. It's not my choice of music. This is generic music. And it's pretty awful. But we're playing that during the breaks until the resolution of whatever in the hell's going on is resolved. Just thought you might want to know, I get a lot of emails on that. Some of you don't ever hear it. Others who hear the breaks do hear it. And that's it's not our fault. We have nothing to do with that. When the stupid thing is over, we'll get back to normal. And we don't know when that'll be. All right, back now to Neil Slade. Well, now your bio's toast, and so is part of my palm.
Hold your hand in a bowl of cold water. I think that may help.
Yeah, sure. I'll do that during the show. All right, so our brain really is that powerful, huh?
It's the command center. You know, it's the one part of your body you can't do without.
Yes. Now, let me stop you there. One of the points that we're going to bring up a lot of new stuff tonight. We've talked about cloud busting in the past, and who knows, we may touch on it, but you have this notion that our body may have a second brain.
Yeah.
Now, that's some notion.
Believe me, this is not my idea. I'm relaying to you and your audience
yes.
the newest scientific findings on our nervous system. And interestingly enough, it really ties in with Dynamo Jack. Because Dynamo Jack, when he explains where he's generating the electricity from that he then guides and controls with his big brain, he points to the area where the scientists are saying our second brain is.
And where is that?
In our belly.
In our bellies.
That's right.
It also
ties in with other information that I've gathered from other people who have shown extraordinary controls of mind-body.
Okay, well, scientists have extensively x-rayed MRI'd and otherwise looked at our bellies, and as far as I know, they haven't seen anything that looks like brain stuff down there.
Well,
right?
here's what it is. There's a nervous system in the belly, and we're talking about in the intestines, called the enteric nervous system. And it's been kind of, you know, we knew about this, but it's been kind of ignored, but doctors are now understanding how it is so similar to our big brain in our head, and that it's just not an extension of the nervous system. Now, what it is, it's a network of nerves that surrounds the let me state it this way. Scientists who study the network surrounding the esophagus, stomach, and intestines compare the better-known brain in the head to a mainframe computer, for example.
Right.
Okay? But
our intestinal brain is more like a Commodore 64?
Well, yes. Because the biological belly brain is a relic of the distant past, when at a time when the most important thing in life was eating, as opposed to thinking, okay? Now, you know, millions of years before the dinosaurs, okay, thinking about tomorrow was distinctly less important than finding the good grub for today, for example. These primitive animals had another concern, and the main concern was keeping their belly full, okay? Now, when animals evolved into doing something more than eating, then they evolved the better-known brain in the skull, okay? Now, they know by studying growing fetuses in the womb,
yes,
that both brains actually originate from a structure called the neural crest. And it appears and divides during fetal development, and then it forms these both separate thinking parts of the brain. They know that the enteric brain, which they've begun studying, and the expert in this field is a fellow by the name of Michael Gershon, who has actually written a book called The Second Brain. The difference between this bundle of nerves and the rest of the nerves, such as the nerves that we have that control motor movement that go through our arms and legs, is that this bundle of nerves in our belly is independent. It is capable of independent action. Now, for example, if we were to cut a connection from the base of our brain, we would no longer be able to move the tips of our fingers.
Right.
We would lose that motor, and we'd lose the sensory information.
Absolutely correct, yes.
Okay? However, you can take the second brain in the belly and separate it from the brain, and it will still continue to function on its own.
That is interesting. Additionally, there is the very famous story of the lady who received the transplant from the 18-year-old boy, middle-aged lady, heart and lung she got.
Yes.
And as you know, she woke up with the wants of an 18-year-old boy and actually ended up dreaming the donor's name, which was a secret. And this came right after she received the heart and lungs of this 18-year-old. It's an amazing story, and it's absolutely true.
I'm familiar with the story, and she had a craving for, it was either beer or Kentucky Fried Chicken or something
all the
like
things
that
he liked.
That she couldn't explain.
That she didn't like. Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Because she had never had that.
Then she actually dreamed his name, which is impossible. So anyway, that would seem to suggest that there is some sort of cellular memory in our body parts, and particularly those, our heart, our lungs, which are in the center of our body here.
Well, there's a write-up of this particular subject in a German magazine called Geo, and a professor Wolfgang Prinz believes all this research is giving new meaning to the saying gut reaction.
Gut reaction.
This particular area, this bundle, this knot of nerves, receives a lot of information from the brain. But the new study is showing that 9 times more information is going from the gut up to the brain.
Huh.
We're talking about 100 billion nerve cells. This is more nerve cells in this area than held in the entire spinal cord. Now, Dr. Prince believes that one of the functions of this area in the belly may be the storing and memory of feelings, of information, and that...
How about especially the food that it is processed for all its living time? In other words, it's processed, what, beer or whatever else it was she wanted. It's processed all of these foods, right? They go through your stomach, your intestinal tract. They just make their way all over the place, right?
Yeah.
So it would have certainly memory of that which it has previously processed and enjoyed.
That's a distinct possibility. And this is what Dr. Prince is saying, that these gut reactions that we have, in other words, feelings towards, you know, like you're suggesting, foods that we eat, but he's suggesting that other types of behaviors that we may exhibit and process.
Base type behaviors or complex behaviors?
Unconscious, subconscious, probably base and complex, because any complex behavior that we have is a collection of simpler behaviors tied together.
Well, then one might, by inference, imagine that some of our collective consciousness also resides there.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Hmm.
It may be that the power, this meeting of the yin and yang that our Dynamo Jack is drawing upon is more than just his own personal power, but perhaps the collective conscious memory connection that's emanating from his belly.
So then when people say things like, I've got a feeling in the pit of my stomach, they're not just kidding. They mean literally, or at least you mean literally, in the pit of their stomach.
Right, absolutely. And what's also very interesting is many psychoactive medicines that are designed to affect the psychology and the mood altering of patients. Those same drugs, almost without exception, have an effect on the activity in the stomach and in the digestive tract and in this area of the brain. And the reason being is that, unlike the other nerves in the system, this enteric brain in our belly has the same neurotransmitters as the big brain in our head. So what we're finding is what the scientists are finding is all these similarities between this independently operating brain in the belly and the brain in the head. Now, what clicked when I discovered this was a couple of pieces of information concerning these higher states of consciousness derived from meditation, and the similarity in technique, not a technique, but the way in which this belly area of the body is used by people who practice yogic healing and meditation.
All right, to me, it's to imagine, first of all, the kind of voltages that you're talking about. that we can see applied in this video, or would be required to set the paper on fire, or apparently do what was seemingly done to those people in the video, those voltages just... I don't see how they could be physically marshaled by the body, ever. I mean, we have nothing like that. The voltages that are measured generally in our body, in our brains, or any part of our body... are little, tiny, barely measurable. Yes, they're voltages, but barely detectable. It takes very sensitive equipment to measure that voltage. And you're talking about something so many magnitudes greater that I don't see how it could be.
Well, you're an electronics person, so you understand the principles of transformers, correct?
Yes, I do.
Now, if you take a wire and you wrap it around and around and around, you can step up the voltage.
Correct.
From a very low amount of voltage to a very high amount of voltage.
That's right.
Okay. Now, what if this 100 billion nerve cells acts as a
transformer. In other words, if the discipline involved by this man is to have the brain arrange these nerve cells so that they're conducting in a manner that would be similar to a transformer, that's very interesting.
Many years ago, I read all of the Carlos Castaneda books.
Yes.
And when I saw Dynamo Jack and then saw this connection with the brain in the stomach, something clicked.
Right.
And I remember years ago, Carlos Castaneda reported Don Juan's teaching. And Don Juan said, the will is in your belly. Do you recall this?
Yes.
And one of the things that Don Juan would have Carlos do is practice projecting the will from the belly, like tentacles, like an octopus tentacles.
Right.
And focus on moving the will from the belly. So again, here's reference to this other nerve brain center in the body. And then we see Dynamo Jack, he's pointing to his belly, saying, this is where the yin and the yang come together.
That's what he said, all right.
Right?
Yep.
Another reference to this belly comes from, now I've just, I'm a mental block on my, let's see, where did I, no, I can't think of this.
You're stuck.
I just slipped my mind.
Well, you've been clicked over in one way too long or something. That's all right. You'll find it. You'll think of it. It's no big deal.
So there are references to this. Oh, okay. Now I just remembered what it was. Mantak Chia is a Taoist doctor and a meditation master.
And
in his seminars, he teaches people, among other things, how to guide the energy in their body. And he also references to this belly area. And the way that he puts it is, he says the energy flows in a circular pattern around the body. It moves up the spine, over the top of the head, and then down towards the belly, and starts all over again. And by concentrating on this particular area of the body, you can then increase the amount of chi energy in the body.
Chi energy.
Bring along better health.
All right, no, listen, I'm okay with your description. Now, yes, I know what a transformer does and how it does it. And so, yes, if one could direct one's nerve endings to act, in effect, as a transformer would, and I can imagine that could be done with your brain.
Yeah.
east of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-285-5033. First-time callers may reach our at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Good morning. Neil Slade is here, and we're talking about our brains, and he just said something that makes all kinds of sense to me about a transformer. I think I can buy that one. This is an amazing man, an amazing story, and an amazing video on my website. For those who keep saying, I can't find it, just go to artbell.com, all right? Click on program on the left, tonight's guest info. Below the name Neil Slade, you'll see right there, real video, fire brain man, high speed or low speed. Click on one of those and see for yourself. That's all I can say. See for yourself. We'll be right back.
KCMO.
All right. Once again, back to Neil Slade. Neil, welcome back.
Thank you.
So then, we might have two brains. What do you think that our other brain thinks about?
Does it think stuff
like, oh no, not popcorn again? Or does it have higher thoughts like, I guess it does have higher thoughts, doesn't it? In other words, it contemplates almost subconsciously that something is either a good idea or a bad idea. Pit of my stomach, gut feeling, all those expressions relate to an intuitive nature of some sort, right?
That's what my gut feeling is telling me. I think this is true. I think it's not a verbal brain. I think it's a more intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
It may very well tie in with the telepathic, paranormal, nonverbal sense that we get about things. This, you know, perfectly described by the word gut feeling. And I think what the teachers such as Don Juan and Mantak Chia are pointing to is learning how to integrate these nonverbal gut feelings into our whole being, so that we function as a whole rather than being, you know, compartmentalized, verbal information or logical information or, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
When we think of the belly, we tend to think of a big unit. We think it's the center of our whole body, as it were.
I'm losing weight. It's not that big a unit anymore. Mine, anyway. All right, so anyway, you've got so much I want to cover with you here. There are pleasure points in the brain.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yes.
Pleasure points. We know there are other points that aren't so pleasurable, but there are definitely pleasure points. And you have talked before, touched on this program, on the one-hour orgasm.
Uh-huh.
Which you claim is possible. I see you call it braingasm here.
Yeah.
I don't know why you call it that. I guess now an orgasm, where does a person have their orgasm? Do they have it? You know, that's an orgasm actually, all kidding aside, which is almost impossible when you get on the subject, but all kidding aside for a second, do we really know when you have an orgasm where it comes from?
Actually know the spot in the brain.
We do.
And it's a
it's tied to the sexual organs, but the place that produces the feeling isn't there, right? That's in your brain.
It's in your brain. It's called the septal area.
The septal area.
Septal area, and there's a couple of neurotransmitters such as dopamine that play a very important part in that part of the brain. It's not what I think. This has actually been proven by scans of the brain by
right.
researchers who have applied chemicals and have applied electrical currents to this part of the brain. And so they know where it's happening. And a fellow by the name of Alan Brower at Stanford University around 1980 published a book called ESO, and where he documents how he has taught laboratory subjects how to deliberately and consciously control the amount of peak sexual experience so that it lasts not for that 30 seconds, but that it goes on for a minute.
Well,
let me
back up what you're saying right now. I know this sounds crazy to a lot of people, but I had a physician on the show, a couple months ago, I guess now, and doing legitimate research into spinal cord injury. Are you familiar with where I'm going here?
No.
No? This doctor, in trying to alleviate pain, people with horrible, unrelenting, terrible back pain, was doing experimentation with applying voltages to the spinal area. And he discovered that one certain area of the spine, it was all accidental. He discovered that if you apply the voltage, put the wires in there, and apply the voltage, it produced in his female patients instant orgasm at the push of a button. I'm not kidding you. This is very, very serious university level research. And in fact, he was so amazed by it. He was a gynecologist. And he was so amazed by it that, he wasn't a gynecologist. I'm sorry. He was a surgeon of some sort, and he consulted with gynecologists about this, and they got to talking about it, and it's something that had never been approached before. He was so intrigued by the idea that he has patented the process, and frankly says he expects to make money on it. But he applies voltage in just the right place to the spine, and orgasm is produced every time you press the button.
Interesting.
Now, of course, we know the spinal cord takes that message where? Straight up to the brain.
Straight up to the brain.
Straight up to the brain.
There have been many people who have begun to start writing books on this subject of how you increase the pleasure responses in the brain. Now, my angle has been that the observations that were made at the brain lab that I took part in found that this type of response was more a byproduct of clearing out malfunctions in the brain, that one didn't necessarily have to deliberately go after this type of experience. Dr. Brower taught his subjects a series of exercises they could do to accomplish this, and you'd have to practice this for a certain amount of time over a period of weeks and months, and you would get more and more, increased pleasurable response to this. But people such as T.D. Lingo, when he started working with his subjects at the brain lab, found that when they began to discharge repressed trauma memories that they had been carrying around since childhood,
yes,
one of the functions, apparently, of the orgasmic response was a cleansing out of the brain, as if it were as if the waste products from released trauma memories were cleansed out by this orgasmic process. And that ties in with what Wilhelm Reich stated many, many years ago about the function of the orgasm. So what has been shown by the Stanford research has been something that was discovered long ago at the Brain Lab as just being a byproduct of a healthy brain.
So we may have unbelievable powers if we care to develop them. They're there now. They're latent. They only need be developed through the proper mental techniques. Yes?
Yes. This is the miracle of the dormant brain, as Nobel laureate Sir John Eccles said. The potential of the brain is infinite. And if one were to say, well, we're using 5% or 10% of our brain, it's too generous an estimate. Because any percentage of infinity is an infinitely small percentage. We were talking a little bit before about, well, how do we get such a big charge out of what normally is seems to be an insignificant charge,
right, that's
in
correct.
People.
Yes.
One analogy that I like to draw is the way that the mind and brain is used. Let's say we have this current in our brain, and it's the current is capable of doing work for us, whether it be intellectual work or whether it be physical work. And if you might envision a sprinkler head that you water your lawn with.
Right.
Okay?
Sure.
Now, the sprinkler head...
Is this the kind that goes all around or goes...
No, I'm talking about just a stationary... Well, no, really just a stationary sprinkler head that's got about 100 little holes in it.
Okay.
Right? And you put it on the middle of the lawn, you turn on the faucet...
Gotcha.
And with a very gentle spray, it sprays a big area. Okay?
Yes.
Or another way of picturing this would be those adjustable nozzles that you put on the end of the hose.
Oh, yes.
Right? And you kind of make it loose, and it covers a very wide area. Now, most of the time, most of us, this is how we're using our mind-brain energy, okay? We have one little sprinkler head hole, and it's going over here, and that's the brain energy that we use to wash our car. Then we've got another little hole that's pointing over here to Monday Night Football. Right. And then we've got another little hole that's pointed over to doing our video computer game. And so our brain force mind energy is scattered in 100,000 different directions all at once. We flit from activity to activity. And what we get is a sort of a gentle force that's accomplishing all the things that we accomplish in our life. But let's say we were to slowly eliminate those holes one by one, or tape up or plug up the holes. What happens to that gentle force? It's kind of like when you turn the nozzle on that hose, turn the end of the nose thing, and you bring the spray, the gentle spray, so it's focusing on a more narrow and narrow and narrower beam. And suddenly what was a gentle spray that was covering the whole lawn has now become a very powerful single beam of water energy that will reach across the street, or that we can wash the windows 30 feet away from, or we can move, rocks out of the garden with this very powerful force. What we've done is we've taken all these multitude of forces, and we've narrowed it down to a single beam, in the same way that a transformer steps up a current. By eliminating the scatter and focusing on one thing, we get a much more powerful force. And this is what the process of focusing the mind, either through a meditation or an abstract imagery exercise, does. You remove all of these scattered thoughts and you bring it to one thought.
Focus.
And this is a focus. And by focusing, you get power. Okay?
Yep.
Now, if you look, if you watch the video, I believe Dynamo Jack says 18 years of meditation, focusing the mind. And if you focus, that's where the power comes.
All right. What is brain feng shui? I you know, feng shui as it applies, for example, to a building. My wife has told me that the area between our house and our garage that we built, which is a large hole, we have built large holes between buildings, and she says good feng shui. It's good feng shui. But I don't know what brain feng shui is. What
brain
is
it? Feng shui is a... many people are familiar with the concept of feng shui now. It's becoming kind of an in...
in thing, yeah.
In thing, right. Brain feng shui is a creative method by which you use your own intuitive power.
Before you explain that, can you just tell me what feng shui is, period?
Feng shui is a... For those who are not familiar with it, It's an ancient art which deals with the placement of physical objects in the home and in the environment so that they help bring better life force energy into your environment.
Sounds like a bunch of crap.
Well, no, it's actually something that's been practiced in China for centuries.
I know. To the average American, it's not like baloney. I mean,
sure.
the placement of things affects everything.
Well, I'll give you a good example, and I think most people could relate to this. Did you ever walk into your house when things were just thrown all over the place, and things were scattered, and you didn't know where anything was? And you have got clothes that are thrown on the floor.
Yeah, like when you come back from a trip.
Yeah.
Chaos.
You know, or you open up your refrigerator and there's stuff that's been growing and it's ready to move inside your... How does that affect...
Is that what your fridge looks like?
No. Definitely, I
sounded
don't.
Sounded like personal experience.
Well, I can remember a time when I would allow that to happen.
Where actual things would grow in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But do you ever try to work in an environment like that?
No, I can't stand it. In fact, I'm such a freak for everything being in its place. You can watch my video cam day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year, and you will see everything has its place in my studio, in my home.
Your brain works better that way. You just feel better. You think clearer, don't you?
I acknowledge that. Yes.
You feel happier. You feel clear. And what is undeniable is that when you walk into a place that is clear and organized, it affects not only your mental state of being, but your physical state of being as well.
In fact, I'll tell you how bad it is. If I'm sitting here doing a show and something falls down, I can't wait till a break. I will go over, I've got a long cord on my mic, and I will, for example, a picture. Even if a picture suddenly goes cattywampus, I can't handle it. I will go over and straighten the picture no matter what I'm doing. I will straighten that picture up. Hold on, we're at the top of the hour. Neil, we'll be right back. Any of the rest of you are in... Is anybody else like that?
Take a ride. Call our
Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, I guess then, if feng shui is having things in the right place so that everything feels right, then I have no argument with it, because it certainly is true. I absolutely cannot stand things being out of place. They have to be where they're supposed to be, or something is wrong, and then I don't function correctly. So in that regard, I guess he's right. Now, how that relates to brain feng shui, we're going to find out in a moment.
KCMO.
Back feng shui here for a moment. There's only one part of this that I don't get, and that is, yes, I have to have everything in the place that I have designed for it to be, for me to be happy. And I am not happy when it isn't. I give you that. But from my understanding of feng shui, why a feng shui expert would come into my room and go, "Oh, Mr. Bell, oh, wrong. You must have that over there, and this entire section must be renovated to show an airy presence of yin and yang and stuff like that." You know, in other words, there's my way, and then there's the feng shui way.
You hit the nail on the head.
I did?
Pun intended. Listen, brain feng shui is the rock and roll of feng shui.
I drove the needle into the brain.
Yeah,
Neil.
Brain feng shui takes off where traditional feng shui peters out.
Okay.
Okay, I'll give you a very concise definition here.
All right.
Brain feng shui uses the advanced, creative, individual powers of your frontal lobes generated by amygdala clicking. And it transforms your personal environment beyond the traditional and standard feng shui methods. With brain feng shui, you're no longer limited or bound by the traditional or classical methods. Exactly what you described. See, your advanced frontal lobes is, you know, the traditional feng shui guy comes in and he says, "Well, listen, you've got to put a bamboo flute over your door."
Yeah, yeah.
And you look at that, and your advanced frontal lobe says, "I don't want a bamboo flute over my door.
That's right.
I want an electric guitar hanging over my front door."
That's right.
And your brain is right. Okay?
So what the hell am I paying this?
Well, listen, you know, when you go to music school, the first thing you do is you study Bach, and then you study Mozart and Beethoven, and you study the classical masters, okay? This is the basis for your work. And then you start writing your own composition.
Mm.
You click your amygdala on, and then music starts coming in from cosmic intelligence, and you're going beyond.
All right, I'll buy that.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I clearly
do. So in my books, what I've done is I get people started, and I say, okay, this is what traditional feng shui is, and I can explain that to your audience a bit, if you want me to. But I say, now here's the next step, and I give a couple examples, and I'll go ahead and do that on the air here as well, too, if you'd like.
Look, let me stop you while we're still early enough in the show and make you plug your stuff. What have you got to offer the audience?
We're now up to 5 brain books.
5 brain
and
books.
And if you're just ordering your first brain book from me, and this all comes from 35 years of research started by TDA Lingo in 1957,
right,
who looked for methods by which ordinary persons could do fun and easy and very quick exercises that would supercharge their creative, intelligence, pleasure, and paranormal abilities.
Right.
And so since 1989, I've been working on a series of books that takes all of that research, plus all the data that I've been getting over the past 10 years from people, you know, the first book came out and people wrote back and contacted me, say, well, I did this and it worked, and I did this and it didn't work. So the next book evolved, and we've learned over the years what works and what doesn't work. So we've got a series of books. First book to get is called The Frontal Lobe Supercharge, and it has all the basic brain self-control information, and people will understand how their brain works, and they'll learn how they can click on the most advanced.
This will actually teach them, right?
How absolutely. To... And all the books are written so that even if you're a junior high school dropout, you'll get it. You'll understand how it works. And they're all fun. Everything is just, we keep it all fun. So that's the first book to get. There's one called Brain Magic. There's a brand new one that we came out with this year called Cosmic Conversations. And we go back to the scientific data. And that actually comes with a CD of brain music.
Really?
There's 10 brain music CDs that are now available. And you can buy individual books, which we keep very reasonably priced. They're $14.94. And they all come with a 40-minute CD now.
Did you say $14.94?
Yes, $14.94.
Nobody charges $14.94. It's 95 cents.
Well, we do.
So
and that includes...
Feng Shui pricing?
I guess so. that's what my brain said to charge for this book. We try to keep it just really affordable. So you get a book and you get a CD. It's a 40-minute CD that's got brain music on it. And it has an interview with brain researcher T.D. Lingo, and I talk about the history of the brain lab. So it's a book and a CD for, like, under $15.
All right.
And then people can get a whole set of, they can get all the books and all the music, and it's cheaper that way, or they can just get one, or they can just get the ones that they want.
All right, and so how do they do that?
They can call, there's a toll-free ordering number.
Which is?
888. 331-7589. And that's 24 hours a day.
Okay.
And we get stuff out as quickly as we can. Of course, we get totally buried after your show. But we try to get everything out just as quickly as we can.
All right.
There's also, they can order off the website, and we take credit cards, or you can mail a check. But, you know, call the number and that has all the information, or go to the website.
All right, that's the easiest way. 888-331-7589. Now,
and as you mentioned before, recommended by Mensa International Journal.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, all
not
right.
Bad. All not
right.
Bad.
All right, so let's give them the quick how to click the amygdala.
Oh, okay, the basic amygdala
clicking?
Yeah,
let's give them that much
okay. So
they understand. Here's what you do, folks.
Okay. What we want to do is turn on the most advanced part of the brain, which is normally only a trickle of, you know, this energy is getting to this part of the brain.
Right.
And this is called the frontal lobes, okay? And the frontal lobes computes creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition, and logic.
All of the higher functions.
All of the higher, the things that make us uniquely human. Now,
yeah.
Most of the time we don't, you know, it helps us to plan ahead. It helps us to compute abstract thoughts, concepts of time, all the really useful things that help us to accomplish our goals and keep us out of trouble.
Right.
Unfortunately, most of the time, just a trickle of energy is getting through to the frontal lobe.
And the brain is operating on its more basic levels, even instinctual levels.
Yeah,
where things like jealousy and anger and fight or flight, all of that resides.
You've got it exactly.
Yes.
Of course, our standard neuroscience joke, the more primitive part of the brain, the core brain, the reptile brain, computes the four Fs, feeding, fighting, fleeing, and reproduction. So most of the time, that's the part of our brain that we're operating out of. And a trickle gets through to the advanced frontal lobes, and we can kind of plan what movie we're going to go to or we're going to have for lunch. But, you know, beyond that, it's kind of, we're not using the infinity circuits of the frontal lobe.
All right, but here on the radio tonight, you can actually describe to people how to really activate this creative, important part of your brain and use it more of the time, right?
Absolutely.
All right. And this is a mental exercise, folks, so listen carefully and try it yourself at home.
We call this feather tickling.
Feather tickling.
And it's been on the radio, and we did this in London and Scotland last month, and they're doing it in Russia now. We call it feather tickling. There's a little switch inside the brain. We call it a click switch, and it's like the switch on that turns the light on and off on your wall, right? When the switch is off, it's dark in the room, and there's no light, and you can't see what you're doing, kind of like being stuck in your reptile brain. But when you click the switch on, the electricity flows up to the ceiling light, and you can see everything in the room and get everything done. So when you click the amygdala switch, it's kind of like clicking on the light bulb in your frontal lobe, and you are able to accomplish those goals and those activities that you want to do, because you're turning on the other 90% of your brain, as it were, that's just been turned off, okay? Now, the amygdala is located right in between the reptile brain and the frontal lobes, and if you saw the video, you can see him put that acupuncture needle in right into that amygdala region. And the amygdala, it's about the size of the tip of your thumb. And it actually comes from the Greek word meaning almond, and it looks like a little wrinkled walnut inside your brain.
Okay.
And if you just take your fingers and just, you know, take your pointer finger and put it in between your ear and your eye on your temple.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
If you go in 1 inch inside each temple,
there it would be.
That's where the amygdala is.
And okay.
You got one amygdala for your left hemisphere of your brain.
One for the right.
One click switch for the left and one click switch for the right. Okay?
Okay.
Right. Now, the way we turn it on is really through abstract imaging. So get yourself comfortable. You'll probably get some subtle results here as we describe it on the air. If you're driving, just remember it and then do it when you get home and you're relaxed and you're not distracted. People report everything from very subtle responses to extremely dramatic currents flowing through their body.
Yes.
Remarkable things.
And so how do we click it?
Okay. Close your eyes. Put your feet flat on the floor.
Right.
Make sure you're not disturbed. Okay?
Right.
And hold up one of your hands in front of you with your eyes closed to pretend that you're holding a feather in your hand.
Right.
And image that feather in your mind's eye.
Right.
And perhaps you can take your other hand and stroke the feather and image that you're feeling the soft, feathery, you know, surface of that feather. Everyone can remember what that feels like.
Feels good.
And imagine that that feather is your favorite color, perhaps.
Green.
That it's a blue feather. It's a
green feather.
Or a green feather. Or maybe it's a rainbow.
Mine is green. All right,
okay?
So.
And reach back as if you could reach inside through the front of your head. And I want you to touch the tip of the feather to the front part of your little amygdala switch on one side. Just very gently tickle it. Tickle it.
Okay.
And then reach over to the other amygdala on the other side. And with the tip of the feather, tickle the front of that amygdala. And as you do that, that will automatically click that amygdala forward and cause an increase in electrochemical processes, and the front of your forehead may begin tingling. You might see some colored lights with your eyes closed.
I gotta stop you. I was really doing this as you were describing that. This is no joke. I was really doing this. And a radio, which I had forgotten I left on. I've got a lot of radios here on my ham. I had left a radio on. I'm not kidding you about this. And I had left the squelch on, and right in the middle of describing that, as I was tickling and moving it forward, I swear to you, the squelch on the radio broke, which means some sort of stupid energy, electrical noise or something, after all these hours, caused that squelch to break, right as I was doing that. Damnedest thing.
Oh, I hear stuff like that daily.
Just now.
People
That's
say,
really weird.
They say they click their amygdala forward, and all of a sudden the street light across the street just
came on, and it's been out for hours. They have, you know, it was a burnout streetlight. All of a sudden, it went on.
It could have been absolute coincidence, but that was pretty neat. If you listen back to the audio and you listen very carefully, I think you'll hear the radio go off in the background. That was really weird. I'm sorry. Okay, so we're tickling.
Well, that was a good demonstration.
Well, it's weird.
You know, there's a lot of things that we're surrounded with, where the balance of something being on or off, things are, they're sort of teetering. And just the slightest change in the environment will sort of like be like the straw that breaks the camel's back. It'll be the thing that switches the squelch on your radio, or it'll be the thing that vaporizes the cloud, you know, our cloud-busting exercise, where, you know, all the water molecules that are 10,000 feet up, they're right on the verge of condensing, and all it takes is a little bit of projection.
A little push.
Of this microcurrent.
You can do it. I mean, a million people will confirm it. You can go outside, get in a lawn chair on a sort of a partly cloudy day, pick out, see, I know the drill on this one, pick out a little wispy cloud or a cloud and concentrate on it. Concentrate on forming a hole in the cloud, or your choice, causing the cloud to disappear altogether. And just keep working on it, and you'll be shocked. Really, really shocked, because you can blow a hole in a cloud. It's called cloud busting. And it really can be done. I've had zillions of emails from people who have tried this after hearing the show, and they all come back and say, oh, my God, it works.
It's amazing what a little bit of focused. It goes back to that thing I was talking about, of focusing what is normally scattered brain energy. That's kind of, oh, what am I going to have for lunch? Oh, I got to get the tire fixed on my car. Oh, I'm going to, let's see what move. Normally we're scattered, okay? But when you learn brain self-control, when you do the exercises that we developed at the brain lab over all these years, you start bringing that energy in and focusing it and transforming it from low voltage to high voltage. And then all these things start happening, and suddenly your life starts working right, and things that were broken are suddenly working again. And it's kind of like it's the difference between walking into a room that you were talking about that you can't stand,
right?
But just picking up a few things here and there, we're not really dramatically changing, you know, massive amounts of, you know, of construction materials. We're just rearranging a few things. All of a sudden, you feel wonderful. So by clicking this amygdala forward, you shifted the direction of brain energy and you focused it, and all of a sudden things start changing. And as you do this over a long period of time, and I emphasize people should keep a track record and actually keep a graph and keep a record of how things are changing. As you click your amygdala forward several times a day, the results accumulate and you change the neural pathways in the brain. And instead of cars going left and right and up and down, all of a sudden the traffic kind of starts going all in the same direction.
Right.
See? Well,
yes, oh, of course I do. And so pretty soon you're utilizing the more intuitive, creative, higher parts of your brain, the amygdala.
By clicking your amygdala forward, right, you're sending the energy from the more primitive, chaotic parts of the brain to the more organized, focused frontal lobe.
And the bottom line is, the more you do it, the more or the easier it becomes.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you learn a musical instrument. The first day you play, you know, you can hunt, you can peck out a couple notes, and then
makes sense.
And then you twinkle, twinkle, and a week later you can play a really simple piece, and in a month you're playing a little Mozart, and in a couple years you're playing Beethoven sonatas, and then you're going out on the road and you're Elton Dunn, you know what I mean? So it's accumulative. It's an accumulative thing. But the way you get started is just with the amygdala clicking. And just try it, you know, just try it for a couple days. And I tell you, the reports I get from people saying, man, something's happening. And I don't understand why, but, you know, ever since I started doing this clicking.
Listen, we're at the bottom of the hour. Soon we're going to take some phone calls. But I've got to tell everybody out there, this was no joke. You know, I'll kid around sometimes on some things.
Somebody named Moose in Buffalo says, come on, Art, is this a joke? No, Moose, this is not a joke. This is real, Moose. It's real. I get these fast blasts. I don't know that we'll ever be able to properly explain this for Moose, but hang in there, Moose, and keep listening, keep tickling, and even you, Moose, well, you never know. But, you know, I've really got to admit that that was strange. At the exact second, that he said, tickle it and move the switch forward. I was really working with it. I had my eyes closed. I was doing exactly as he said. And of all those hours and all those seconds when this thing, the squelch, could have broken on the VHF radio, it chooses that second to break. Now, that is really, really, really weird. And that radio has been on all during this evening's program preparation. And all through the program, I kept it on. I didn't realize I had. I shouldn't have. It was kind of dumb, actually. But it was quiet, so I just didn't think about it. And in that instant, it broke squelch, as if some sort of energy suddenly was heard and took it over the threshold of the squelch. That was really, really, really weird. All right, back to Neil Slade, and we're going to begin to take some calls, if that's okay by you.
That's okay by me. You know, I have to mention, too, we have a doctor with 3 medical degrees in Cleveland who is now going to begin research that will document the changes in the brain as observed by brain scanning machines when people do this amygdala clicking thing. I'm always hearing from psychologists and doctors and social people and educators who have read the books and understand.
Yes.
And they're using, you know, all the different amygdala clicking techniques presented. So, you know,
well, I know
they're thinking of some crazy guys.
Yeah, they have scientifically monitored yogis as they do things that seem impossible, you know, controlling their heart rate or other things that are supposed to be involuntary. They have absolute control over them. And I know they've done some monitoring of those people scientifically, so why not in your area of research?
Absolutely. So we're going to, hopefully in the next couple of years, we're going to have hard scientific documentation that shows, you know, the actual processes that the brain goes through when people do things like the feather clicking exercise and focus on these specific areas of the brain.
Incredible. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade and Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you doing this evening?
All right, sir.
You guys are doing good.
Where are you?
I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
Name's Dick.
Yes.
I enjoy your program. I'm a fairly new listener within the last couple months.
Okay.
You really wind my brain, my binder in my brain. You're doing good.
All right, good.
I got a kick out of your story about that lady you were talking about that had the heart and lung transplant.
Oh, that's a well-documented story.
Oh, I know. I used to be a program on television, The Other Side, that had a bunch of interesting paranormal stuff. On that, on the brain and in some of the other organs, is there a memory?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Some sort of cellular memory, or this second brain might suggest that the organs in the center of our body have some sort of, I guess, neural pathway to the brain that is there. I don't know. I don't have these answers, but some things are obvious.
Well, like that, what we know specifically, or what I've learned about this enteric nervous system in the belly, is that it shares, there's something like 50 neurotransmitters in the brain. And these have to do with memory and learning, and you know, these neurotransmitters allow signals to pass from one neuron to the next neuron, and how we process information. Well, these neurotransmitters don't operate in the other parts of the body, but they do operate in this enteric brain nervous system in our belly as well.
Another interest, so that could lead one to believe that memories are being stored in the same manner in this belly brain as they are in the head brain. Another thing that they have discovered is the brain, in our head, we have cortex neurons, which is the outside layer, and they're supported by what's called glial cells. The cortex being the gray matter, and then underneath is the white matter. Then the nerves in the rest of the body have a different type of supportive cells. But again, this belly brain also has glial cells supporting those neurons, just like in the head brain.
Got it.
So there's probably, it seems likely that there may be storage of memory in this belly brain as well.
As evidenced by that piece. Caller?
Yeah. Another thing is interesting, they had another guy that had a liver transplant and started developing some of the personality from the person he got the transplant from.
I know. There you are again. I mean, you hear story after story. Here's an interesting question from Bob in Cleveland, Ohio. Can tickling the amygdala cause panic attacks or flight or fight responses? What are the risks for anxiety sufferers?
That's a fairly common question, and people do get it wrong. And sometimes I get comments from people that they say, well, I tickled my amygdala and I got a headache. And I said, well, if you got a headache, you're clicking your amygdala backwards.
Oh?
The amygdala registers two types of emotions, two basic families of emotions, negative emotion or positive emotion. Just like the light switch on your wall, it has an on position and an off position.
So then panic attacks or a flight or fight responses would be the wrong direction. You've gone the wrong way.
Right. If you stimulate the back part of the amygdala, you'll get fight or flight panic. Okay? Or if you have an amygdala that's missing, in fact, you'll get that type of thing, and you won't even be able to click forward.
So then, in a way, that's a very useful question because it demonstrates what you're doing wrong.
That's right. If you're doing the visualization, you have to make sure that you're visualizing tickling the front part. Okay? If you're clicking backwards, you'll get the negative emotion or negative feeling. If you're clicking forward, that will indicate that you're doing correctly. So if you're getting negative, painful stuff, stop doing it that way that you're doing it and do it the opposite way.
All right. It makes all the sense in the world. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade and Art Bell. Good morning. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, Neil, I have a question for you.
Okay.
This is Luke. I'm calling from Southeast Washington in the Columbia Basin area.
All right.
Years ago, I had an experience years ago that up until tonight, after hearing your program, I thought that it was more supernatural, but now I'm wondering if it wasn't just physiological. I had some friends invited me up to the Blue Mountains in northeast Oregon, and we had snowmobiled all night long, hundreds of miles all around the place. Well, not hundreds, very far, in the snow, and I'd lost the keys to my truck. And it was parked at my host's house. And I was very disturbed by this because I knew they'd have to drive me out of there. And it was going to be very hard for them to get me back. And they looked around with our snowmobile headlights for the keys just to make me feel better. And we formed a circle and we realized, we weren't going to find them. But I really had to have them. And it was an overwhelming feeling that suddenly came across me that my keys were right there, and with my boot I pushed the snow away from the ground right where I was standing after I said, I know my keys are right here, and there they were. And we had been all over that night, and I still can't explain it. I was wondering if this was physiological or what's your comment on that?
There's a couple ideas that come to mind. One is very often when we need something and our regular senses are ineffective, our higher paranormal senses take over.
Right.
And I often tell people, if you're clicking your amygdala forward and you really have the need
to know something, your paranormal abilities will click on for you. You don't have to do tricks, and you don't have to prove them. When you need that paranormal ability, when you really need it, and you're clicked forward, they'll turn on and you'll get what you need. And that sounds, this sounds like exactly what happened in this instance. You ran out of regular alternatives. You did everything you could. The only thing you had left was the paranormal ability, which clicked on for you and got you what you needed at that point. I once had a very, very unusual incident similar to that. I was going out to my music lessons, and I was in, I didn't plan ahead, and I was in kind of a rush, and I got outside my house after locking my front door, and I looked to see how much time I had to get to my lesson, and of course I left my watch inside the house. I looked at my wrist, and there was nothing there. Great. Well, I didn't have time to go back in and get my watch. I had to find a clock when I got to my student's lesson. So I got in my car and I drove about a half mile down the street, and I absentmindedly looked at my wrist again to see what time it was. And to my astonishment, my wristwatch was now on my wrist. And so here was an instance where the materialization or telekinesis kicked in when I really needed a watch.
That's never happened to me. Every time I look down when I forget my watch, and I do it all the time, it's a reflex when you wear a watch to look at it. My wrist has always been empty. My watch has never appeared. It's always where I left it by the bed.
I understand what you're saying. And here's the thing. When I noticed my watch was missing because I got downstairs and my neighbor was coming down his stairs at the same time, and I believe he remarked to me what time was it, and that's when I looked at my wrist and I said, I don't have my watch. So I know I didn't have my watch on my wrist until I got further down the street close to the lesson.
Pretty advanced stuff, Neil.
So sometimes, you know, the paranormal stuff kicks in, usually when you least expect it, but always when you really need it.
All right, caller.
Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you. Interesting explanation, actually. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade and Art Bell. Good morning.
Yeah, this is Charlie in Miami.
Hello, Charlie.
You brought up an interesting point a little bit earlier when you were talking about the man that had the current to be able to light up the newspaper.
We've got the video. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. I don't have access to your computer.
But
go to your library.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss
it. Yeah, you really don't want to miss this one.
Yeah, it sounds interesting, but you brought up a point about, you know, creating a feedback with the nervous system and creating more and more energy.
That's right.
Like
a transformer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a lot of psychic activity, sometimes it happens involuntarily. That, in other words, people that, you know, have OBEs and things, and they, you know, didn't have any kind of conscious discipline to do it. I mean, could spontaneous human combustion be this particular energy feeding back into the body, and the person not really being able to control it or aware that it's happening to them?
I've never thought of that, but that could be an explanation of this latent current. Maybe there's a short circuit somehow, or maybe, and I have read, you know, pretty good documented instances of this spontaneous combustion. It's not at all common, but it has happened on occasion.
Yes, it has. Documented.
So, you know, we talked about the latent or potential current in the body. This may be an example of a short circuit in that electrical system. And that may be an explanation for it.
Well, it sounds like one of those kind of things, Art, that you really don't care to have in your life is something you have to experience.
Well, yeah. Here's something that we might all want to think about from Stephen in Columbus, Ohio. Here's a really good question. I have all my life from panic attacks, which are probably reptilian in nature, brain-wise. And he asks, based on questions from the Cleveland listener, can clicking forward be used to stop panic attacks? Why would someone need medication if they could do this? In other words, if you've got a reptilian reaction going on that you don't like, either a headache or a panic attack or any one of a million other base functions of our brain, can we stop them by learning this technique?
Yes. I just watched a video this evening. This is of a 19-year-old girl named Natalie, and the MRI shows that she is missing her amygdala.
Oh, now, no.
What the amygdala, what happens to this girl is she has uncontrolled levels of anxiety and anger and panic.
Right.
She would be she's terrified at her own reflection in the mirror, okay? Now, this fear, anxiety, panic instinct is something that's produced by the core primitive parts of our brain, and we all have this built into our brain. You know, it's our instinctually we feel fear when we see a stranger, but the amygdala controls this fear instinct and allows us to reason past it by clicking on the cortex and the frontal lobe. So when we see a stranger, we are able to override this instinctual panic. Now, if you have a panic or anxiety that you can't control, it's as if this amygdala circuitry is stuck in the backward position, and you haven't been able to override it.
But a lot of times, you will meet a stranger that you either dislike or distrust immediately on sight. Now, they talk about love at first sight. There's hate at first sight, too, and dislike and distrust at first sight.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of the instinctual brain we should be listening to.
Well, that may be an instance where the intuitive or the instinctual or even the environmental cues that we're getting is saying, no, you have to be afraid of this person.
That's right. That could be. All right. Very quickly, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, this is Yogi Don here.
Yogi Don?
And my cat, I wanted him to come over and say hi to you, Art, but he's looking out the window.
That's how they are.
Yeah. I just got through giving his tuna. Anyway, Neil.
Yeah.
The solar plexus is the energy center. Do you agree?
It seems that way from what we've seen on the video.
And the previous caller about the internal combustion, that's a short circuit, correct. I was going to bring that up, but the previous caller brought that up.
Well, it really is a good point. I mean, if the kind of electrical voltage and current can be generated that we're talking about or is demonstrated in this video, then human combustion may be, huh?
Yeah, right. Art, first we're spiritual, second we're electric, third we're physical. Okay, the electric things, we call it transmitting pranayama, which is our energy force to a person who is sick. Ian had a guy on, a healer, over the weekend, and Neil, I just, you know, to a yogi, we call it, most people are in an ordinary mind. We call it tapping into the universal mind, which the common things of people that get upset, that doesn't even faze us.
Listen, you know? Caller, this hour is ending. This is not to you all a bunch of baloney, is it?
Oh, no.
No, all right. Well, listen, thank you very much. I'm sorry, we're going to have to hold it there. Neil, I ask all guests, can you stay one more hour?
I would love to.
All right, then it's a done deal. We'll be back with more of your phone calls for Neil Slade. It's all about our brains, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Good morning. It's a great morning out there.
On a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day. Lonely sailors cut the time away and talk about their homes. And there's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say brandy, that's another round. She serves them whiskey and wine.
Thank you. Once again, here's Neil Slade. Neil, welcome back.
Thanks. You know, I got a little story about
cosmic memory.
Cosmic?
Can I relate that to you?
Yeah, sure. What is cosmic memory?
Well, you know, there's this state of mind we call a cosmic consciousness.
Yes.
I believe you once told people of a dream that you had, or it was, you didn't call it a dream, but you felt yourself leaving your body. It's this timeless.
Oh, that wasn't a dream. That was not a dream, Neil. You're talking about an OBE. I've had
right.
one, and there's
well,
no
you were
question.
In bed when it happened.
I beg your pardon?
You were in bed.
I wasn't dead?
No, you were in bed.
Oh, in bed, yes. I was
yeah,
in,
that's
de-
what I
in fact, in bed, but I guarantee you, I know dreams, I know nightmares, and I can differentiate by a million miles, you know, a dream and what happened to me in Paris. Trust me on this.
Oh, yeah. No, I believe you on that. It's this timeless sort of all-knowing, unity, peak consciousness experience?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I had to call it that, but...
It's a connection with outside yourself. It's going beyond the limitations of what you know in your own.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, sure.
Well, there's four known ways that historically people have been able to do this. One is the near-death experience, which is one good way to experience this cosmic connection or the cosmic memory or the, what they call the Akashic records, to view them. The drawback being that it may not be healthy for you. You may or may not come back from the near-death experience. The second way to achieve this cosmic consciousness is you can take a psychedelic drug, for example. You could take 500 milligrams of LSD or mushrooms. The drawback of this being is you could get arrested, or you might have a bummer trip. You know, you might see God, but you also might see Satan. With this particular method.
Yep.
The third method is the traditional classical meditation and fasting method, and this seems to work for people. But again, even as Dynamo Jack attested, he had done it for 18 years. People sometimes meditate for 20 years before they have one of these cosmic consciousness experiences.
Well, most of the people like Dynamo Jack and the people, the New Agey people that you talk to, when you talk about these powers and these abilities, they say the greater cosmos will only allow these things to be used for good. You cannot use these things for evil. Well, you know, that's a bunch of...
I got to admit, I used to say that.
That's a steaming pile of... You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Even
yeah.
Dynamo Jack said...
I got a side with you. You got me on that one. And, I mean, from the horse's mouth, he said you can use it to kill
yeah.
or to heal. It's
That's
your
right.
choice.
That's right.
So, yeah, I'm a convert.
I always thought that. I mean, if this stuff was true, then it's like any power, and you can name any power on Earth right now, and it can be used for good or evil.
I think the tendency is for people who do have these kind of powers, though, is to use them for good.
So
because
maybe
I think they recognize the law of karma and,
right.
and that kind of thing.
Oh,
I think
sure,
the great
okay.
tendency is that way. But anyway, back to this all-knowing information bank that's beyond the self. The fourth way is to focus on your frontal lobes and click the amygdala. And at the brain lab, people would report, and we talk about them having this peak experience from 2 weeks to 3 years once they start doing the amygdala clicking and other brain exercises. And the reason I thought of that was because I had gotten an email from a 16-year-old, and back to memory. And he wrote to me, and he said, "Hi, Neil, I'm 16, one of your younger brain explorers, I guess. Anyway, on Wednesday, I had an interesting experience with the amygdala clicking. It was first period, and I had a Spanish test I had failed to practice for. The teacher gave us 20 minutes to study for it. I decided to take a chance. So for the full 20 minutes, I did the amygdala clicking exercise off and on until the teacher said, 'Clear everything from your desk.' As soon as I started taking the test, I suddenly remembered everything, and my mind was completely clear, and I aced the test. Thought I'd share my experience with you, and then he has a Spanish sentence here that I can't understand because I don't understand Spanish. But here was an incident of a kid who clicked into the bigger universal cosmic memory by clicking the amygdala forward and connecting directly to that big source of information in the sky. And he aced his test. So that's another way. It's a quickie way. You know, you can meditate for 20 years or maybe get a little boost by clicking forward.
Fascinating. Really fascinating. All right, here we go again. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hello, Mr. Bell. Hello, Mr. Slade.
Hi.
This is Albert calling from Toronto, listening on AM 610.
Yes, sir.
Great experiment number 9. Why don't we perform an exorcism on the whole world and cast Satan back into heaven where he came from and let him and God battle it out, their disagreement, without humans being caught in the middle and at risk of losing their soul every day?
Well, all right, let me modify what you just said a little bit. You, of course, Neil, well know the chain of experiments that began with you, actually, starting them.
Yeah.
That I did.
Yeah.
And that I haven't done for quite a while. Another thought I've had is, there is said to be a collective consciousness, right?
Like what the 16-year-old kid clicked into?
Yeah. Exactly. There is said to be that, right?
Yeah.
So, it might be possible for great experiment number 9 or 10 or whatever to get millions of people to inject, I wonder if you've ever thought of this, inject a new concept or idea into the greater consciousness. You ever think about that?
I believe so, and the name I came up with was the Universal Energy Bank.
Yeah.
And
I don't know, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
I've noticed that with millions of minds working, you can achieve big things. I think we proved that with the experiments I did run. But I've been considering ever since then what other things you might try. And one of them might be to inject a whole new idea or concept into the group consciousness. Sort of just slam it in there with millions of people thinking about the same thing at the same time. And change the course of humanity.
I've got no argument for you there.
I mean, suppose, for example, just as an example, that we were to have millions of people concentrating on modifying the environment in some significant, very important way for humanity. Might that work?
I think it would depend on what you're visualizing or what that key idea might be.
Well, let's say that you're trying to cause a realization among all peoples that the environment is in trouble and that people have to take individual and collective action and get up their butts and do something about the environmental difficulties we have. This is all pure conjecture, it's something I've been thinking about as a possible experiment.
Yeah, the only problem I would see there would be, how would you measure your results? You know, if you have a fairly,
It's true. We've done previous experiments. We have done where the results were immediately obvious.
Yeah.
Bringing rain where there was none, that sort of thing. Immediately obvious. But something I thought a little trickier, a little perhaps more useful down the line for all of us. I don't know if that kind of thing could be done, but if it could, millions of minds might be able to do it. Just a thought. All right, wildcard line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Well, good morning. Neil, you were mentioning the solar plexus in the last hour. I just caught the end of it there.
Yeah.
I was wondering, every once in a while, actually quite frequently, it just started maybe a year and a half ago, I get this pressure right in the, exactly in the solar plex region. It feels almost exactly like someone is just taking their finger and pushing it back. And I don't think it's indigestion, and I have no idea. I'm not familiar with these subjects. Does that mean anything? Or you were saying something about it connects, or the energy levels or something connects there. Have you ever heard that before?
I can't say that anyone's, you know, asked me about that specific thing before. And, you know, just tonight we started tossing around this idea of the, of, you know, this enteric brain and the, and the second brain. So,
because
it'd be hard for me to make, you know, a sort of personal diagnosis and any kind of general statement.
Okay, and on the clicking the amygdala, I guess is how you say. You were on with Ian and you did the same, you explained it the same way to him, but I think at the end of it, are you supposed to push the energy out forward through your forehead? Wasn't that one of the things you mentioned, or?
Yes.
For me?
Yes,
okay.
It was. I have a diagram in the frontal lobe supercharge book as well. What you want to do is project the energy that's moving into the frontal lobes out, back out to universe, completing the circuit. If you don't complete the circuit, you sort of become like a plugged up toilet, as it were.
Yeah.
And all life energy is you know, when the environment is healthy, you have a circulation of energy.
Right.
And when the amygdala is clicked backwards, you're thinking me, me, me. You're thinking ego. You're thinking, what's good for me? What's going to help me? Okay? What's going to make me feel good? Okay? Well, you have to grow beyond that. You're just an infant if you're just sucking in energy.
Mm-hmm.
The mature frontal lobes adult projects energy. I like to think of the human system like a tube, for example. Okay? Energy comes in the tube and then it leaves the tube. And the circulation is what makes the human energy system vibrant, because it's moving. If you plug up one end of the tube and the energy doesn't leave the tube, it becomes stagnant. And it becomes a non-moving thing, and the circulation ends, and that's the end of it. Okay, so you've got to project the energy out of the system, so circulation goes in a circular pattern. It goes from universe into you, and then back out to universe again. And it's very easily to visualize this as a beam of light leaving the frontal lobes. Or, you know, any kind of projection that is going from you back out to universe.
Okay. I think I've got it. Time for one more at least. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hi. This is Yvonne from Arcata, California, KGOE.
Yes.
I just had a quick comment. Somebody called earlier and mentioned something about spontaneous combustion as sort of a backfire if you do it wrong.
Right.
I thought that spontaneous...
Or as a possibility.
As a possibility.
Right.
Well, my understanding was that they finally figured out that possibly spontaneous combustion had to do with something called a wicking process. Have you heard about that?
Wicking? No, I don't think I have. Neil?
No.
What is that, hon?
Well, I'm not too good at describing it, but my understanding is that it has something to do with sort of an internal kind of a... you know what? I'm going to let it go at that. Someone out there knows what I'm talking about. Please call in and explain it better than I possibly could. Thanks, Art.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
But we were highly speculative on our own.
Indeed.
Explanation of what.
Indeed. However, it's not that wild, because if you can really generate the kinds of voltages and current that set that newspaper in that video on the website on fire, then, I don't know, that's not so wild, in my opinion. But, who am I? Hey, you've got to see that video, and I want to say that one more time for those who have joined the program late.
if you want to see something that, I guess you've either got to believe that everything we're talking about tonight is real after you see the video, or you've got to believe it's some kind of hoax or magic, or it's one of the two. Either everything is real, or it's a trick, some kind of horrible trick, and it's been investigated, and it doesn't seem to be a trick. So that leads you back to the former. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hello, this question is for Neil Slade.
Yes.
Ever since I have been, I don't have any help for the lady who was asking about the wicking, but I do have a question. Ever since I was a child, I've had an ability to, I can't fully explain what I'm doing, and I'm not sure what I'm doing, but I've had this ability, and I still have it, to turn on and off some sort of energy is all I can describe it as. Like at any point in time, like right now or when I'm talking or when I'm walking, I can do this, and I just turn it on, and basically it feels sort of like there's an energy flowing all through my body is the best way I can describe it. And I'm wondering, where does this lead to eventually? I'm not sure if this is relevant to tonight's discussion, or what steps can I take next to further this?
Well, it sounds like you're feeling some life force energy moving through the body. The next step is, what do you do with it? And again, this goes back to the couple callers ago who asked about projecting the energy. And so it sounds to me as though you want to direct, focus this energy that you're feeling to accomplish those things that you want to accomplish, whether it be contributing to society or helping other people or whatever it is. If you don't direct the energy and get it flowing out of you, again, it's just like it's putting a stopper on the bottle. Nothing's going to come out. It's not going to do any good.
Right.
Does that make some sense?
Sort of, but this is definitely like a physical sensation that takes.
Yeah, sure. Oh, absolutely. I'm sure.
Very physical, I've never had any sort of understanding of what should it be directed.
Maybe you do now. Try the exercises and let us know.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. And Neil, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Chuck in Madison, Wisconsin says, wicking effect is caused by people falling asleep while smoking or next to a candle. And he says the person has to be fat on top of that. So, like the wick of a candle, it reaches you and... poof! Bend me, shape me, ignite me. We'll be right back. How many of you have begun to use it? I suspect with shows like this, more and more all the time. KCMO. Once again, back to Neil Slade. Neil, you're back on the air again, by the way, for all of Neil Slade's products. The Brain Books and the CDs, all of it available at an 800 number, or technically 888. 331-7589. That's 888-331-7589. And you recommend they begin with your first book if they are a beginner, right?
If you haven't bought a brain book, definitely. Frontal Lobe Supercharge is the book, and it's got all the stuff you need to know. And you can get any other books in addition to that. And like I said, there's a complete set that's like, it's got 8 hours of brain music, and it's got either 3 or 5 books in it.
Well, my guess is if somebody gets the first one and it works, that they're probably going to come back and order the rest of them.
And believe me, that's what happens. Sure.
Yeah, I would imagine so. All right, let us continue moving. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Good morning.
Hello, Art. Love your show. Hello, Neil.
Hi there.
Ever since I was young, 7, 8 in grade school, I have a pressure point in my forehead that I can lean up against a pencil or something, and it
makes that spot area tingle, and I feel like I see myself outside of my body flying like a bird.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So you're directly stimulating the prefrontal cortex and causing, you know, maybe you have a flexible cranial suture in
what,
that.
What was that?
That was a semi-truck.
Oh, you're on a road. All right. Sorry about that.
I pulled over and stopped.
Okay.
He just left his body.
Yeah, I know. It sounded
on the air.
Sounded like that, yes.
And, you know, maybe you've got an extra suture there or something, but it sounds like you're responding to, you know, to physical pressure.
Yeah.
And causing, this frontal lobe's reaction by actually physically manipulating that part of the brain. Most of us have to do it the inside out.
Okay. Throughout the years, I've been able to touch that same spot and get the same reaction. And I could do it today, I'm sure. I haven't done it in a while.
And you have an out-of-body feeling or experience when you do that?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, researcher T.D. Lingo maintained for years that the paranormal experiences, including this out-of-body thing, were occurring in the frontal lobes portion of the brain, specific to that area. And, you know, it sounds like you're giving some pretty good supportive evidence, you know, that physical stimulation of that area is producing exactly those results.
Great. Well, I like it.
Yeah, keep it up.
I hear you. All right. Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Take care. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Good morning.
Oh, yes. Good morning, Art. Warm greetings to you and Neil.
Thank you.
And I was just going to see if Neil was interested in hearing a peak experience I've had. I guess I've been practicing since I first heard his program over a year ago.
Okay. We'd love to hear it.
Okay.
You're an experienced amygdala clicker, it sounds like.
Yes.
Or,
I was pretty dedicated there for a couple years now, I guess. At any rate, I was trucking, and after a long evening of trucking, I had parked at my last stop and had been bent over to pick up something that had fallen out of my driving bag. And I was kind of rummaging around down there, and when I leaned up, I felt really lightheaded, like you'd stood up too fast. And gosh, I got this just intense amygdala click, and something pushed me back into the truck seat. I kind of sat there at attention, and I was seeing this image, and it opened up and was filled with some really intense light. And I looked around and tried to gather information about what I was seeing, and after a while, I came back through a barrier of sound and was just sitting in the truck again.
Wow.
And I wondered if any of the others reporting had ever experienced things like that.
Oh, I get that frequently. What is common is that this type of peak experience, and it was a pleasurable, intense, sounds like, just very unusual transcendence type of experience for you. Is that correct?
Yes, much so. And I would say the idea of being kind of held there and something wanting me to look at this, that I kind of, you know, I always wondered what those little girls in Fatima, Portugal were experiencing and that there was some other force that was working on them.
Well,
so, yeah, I think it had a real spiritual content for me also.
Well, the commonality is this, and I mentioned this earlier in the program, that the effects are cumulative. And they happen after you've been doing it. You sort of like build up an energy reserve, and at a certain point you have this, you burst through. We call this the frontal lobe's transcendence, or Big Bang, or, you know, pre-popper experience. What's common is it's accumulative. It happens after you practice the clicking for a long time, but also that it happens when you least expect it. It's not something that you plan. It happens when you're not planning it, and you never know when it's going to happen. And you know, when I tell people they can expect something like this between 2 weeks and 3 years of doing the clicking exercise. And it's a life-changing experience. One analogy I say is that it's like going the speed, you feel like the energy of a diesel train is moving through your brain and body at 100 miles an hour, but pleasurably so. Or it's like when Christopher Columbus or Magellan or someone, they're on the ocean for what seems like an eternity, and they're waiting to fall off the ocean any minute, and all of a sudden somebody yells, "Land ho!"
Uh-huh.
It's that kind of experience. And it's what happens when you practice brain self-control, and it's more predictable than 20 years of meditation, and it's more of a direct route to this cosmic experience that I was referring to earlier. And you're one guy who is showing that I'm not full of baloney.
Oh, great! Thank you so much for your sharing. I appreciate it. And Art, thank
yes,
you
sir.
For keeping the open flow of information coming to the folks.
You bet. Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Morning.
Hey, how you doing, Art?
I'm doing all right. Where are you?
I am in Wichita, listening to 1330.
On a cell phone. On a cell phone, right?
Yeah, I'm driving my truck.
Okay.
Back to KC.
All right.
In my younger days, I was pretty rebellious, and I noticed that I had a knack of, as you guys would say, I guess, thinking out of my stomach. My first experience was with my teacher, and as a result, the principal also, but I got so mad at them for what they were doing that I'm not an angry person, I'm not violent. What I did was I was like, oh gosh, I wish there was something I could do, and I made myself upset in my stomach. And I noticed that he had a bowel movement in his pants. Of course, then the principal started getting on to me. I thought I was saved. And when I got into the principal's office explaining my situation, he, didn't side with me, and I made this happen to him. And, of course, later on, three or four years down the line, I got caught with narcotics and in court. And I have a public defender and their side lawyer. And I told them the day before that if they didn't go my way, that I was going to make them spew in their pants. And I did. It's all documented now, and I've noticed that I have this knack of doing that. I just want to let this go. And I make myself sick, and I actually do it to myself too. And that's the thing. I can only mind control myself and make the effect transfer.
All I can say is I just don't want to get on your bad side.
Yeah, same here. Thank you,
well,
caller.
It's not a hateful thing, you know.
Well, it depends on.
It's just something I just.
I do.
I like humiliation when somebody upsets me in that matter.
Well,
thanks,
I was going to say.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, you
bet. Great guest.
Yes, take care. I was going to say it depends on which side of the thought you're on, but I west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
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 This is Steve from Boise, Idaho.
Hi, Steve.
I got a question for your guest, Neil. My younger days, I had a friend of mine who could not wear a watch. I don't know if he had too much electrical charge or what, but he wouldn't, you know.
I have
watch
heard
would
of
run
people.
For more than an hour.
Yeah, I've heard of people like
this
that.
This was before the days of the LCDs, and it would just he would just kill him.
I know a gentleman like that, and I met him at the bookstore, and he is a scientist, in fact, and he has friends who are electrical engineers, and one of his friends absolutely forbids him to walk to his laboratory workplace, because when he does, all the equipment starts going haywire. And this is a scientist who has this problem. So I've heard of this before.
Yep.
Okay.
So have I.
Have you heard of the song Cloud Busting by Kate Bush?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay. Just checking. That's all I had.
All right. Well, it would have been good bumper music for tonight, probably.
Yeah. She wrote actually about the Wilhelm Reich's cloud-busting machines, and she did a videotape where she portrays the son. She's wearing makeup, of course. The son of Wilhelm Reich as he's carted off by the Food and Drug Administration.
You know, I wonder about something, Neil. I wonder if people who we call natural psychics or natural experiencers of the paranormal, and I've known quite a few of them through the years doing this program, believe me, some of them, Neil, don't like what happens to them. They don't like being part of the paranormal, having these kinds of experiences or knowing things they really shouldn't know otherwise.
Yeah.
They don't like it. And I wonder if for these people, learning your technique in reverse would help them stop what they don't want.
I had that exact question. You know, I mentioned to you that I did a lecture at the Art Bell Listeners Chat Club here in Denver last week.
Right.
And I had that exact question from a woman, and she had four different cancers over a period of 4 years, and she healed herself of all of those. But one of the problems was when she got sick, she started having these, the telepathy and the paranormal things, and it was happening all the time. And she asked, how can I turn those off? And I haven't come up with an answer for her yet. I would suspect, however, that if there is an answer, it is, in the brain. And there's probably some kind of meditation that she could do, or focusing on, which part of her brain is producing these, the unpleasant side effects of this, and probably some good meditation would give her or another person like this an answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
Just focusing on where this information is coming, and I really believe you can control the internal dialogue and processes of the brain consciously. So if there is, just as though one can turn off the anxiety and the negative emotions, it would seem logical to me that one could also control the advanced annoying powers of the brain as well.
Hear, hear. All things are not always welcome. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade and Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
Las Vegas.
Oh, Las Vegas, over the hill. All right.
it's funny you just talked about that, because I was going to ask about how to kind of stop, if you don't want it, you never even tried to have this stuff, with your brain and everything. It comes as a surprise, and it's something you're not used to. You kind of want to get rid of it, I mean, if you don't know how to deal with it.
I agree with that.
Right.
Completely.
Okay, so I was wondering too, if that clicking and turning it off, if that would help with any, abilities a person has that have to do with the brain.
Well,
I know it's the same thing you just answered, kind of.
Well, yeah. Let me go into a little more detail. There's a part of the brain called the thalamus, and
right.
It's like a valve in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally, your senses are bringing in all kinds of information, all kinds of sensory information into your brain. And you have to filter out a certain amount of that, or you're so distracted you can't get anything done. One of the chemicals that helps to filter out this vast amount of information is serotonin, which is one of the neurotransmitters. If you don't have enough serotonin or dopamine is another one in your brain, it's kind of like taking, again, a psychedelic drug, and you're overwhelmed with sensory information, and it becomes unpleasant. It's like getting the colors are too bright, and you're hearing voices, and
This is a problem that schizophrenics have. They're hearing voices, and they're unable to focus and accomplish what they want to do.
Right.
So probably one might be able to focus on changing the release of those neurotransmitters in the brain so that you're able to filter out the information as it would normally be filtered out. You know, we know from the voluntary control studies at Menninger that one can actually affect the autonomic nervous system. You can consciously change blood flow. You can consciously change body temperature, heart rate. And it would follow that you could probably change chemical makeup in the brain to a certain extent as well. This is why people take drugs like Prozac, because they're trying to change the amount of chemical flow within the brain. And it would seem as though you could consciously, with practice, alter that chemistry, neurochemistry makeup in the brain as well, and then quiet things down so you're not getting sensory information overload.
All right, listen here, my friend. The program is coming to a close. We're running out of time, quite literally. And so, one last time, you've got books, you've got CDs, you've got lots of ways to continue this investigation, all of them available at the following number, 888, toll-free number, 888-331-7589. That's 888-331-7589. You have done a fantastic job tonight, Neil.
Thank you very much.
Probably the best yet, actually.
Well, I'm happy to hear that.
It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you, and we will do it again.
All right, Art.
Good night, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that's Neil Slade. And now you know more about you than you did before if you were listening. Listen, for the press in Washington, D.C., remember, tomorrow morning, Dr. Stephen Greer, the National Press Club, 9 o'clock in the morning. That's this morning, actually, at 9 o'clock. Dr. Stephen Greer with some pretty impressive people. Fourth highest person at one point in the FAA. Pilots, scientists, all saying some pretty incredible things. And what I would say to news editors across the country, but particularly in Washington, D.C., is you've got one hell of a story waiting for you at the press club. Be there. For now, I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. Ta-ta.